It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on this, the 6th day of December 2018. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you go if you would like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump right in. You'll be met by the likes of Anatole and Squeaky and Urban Prospector and VT Blom. More to follow in fairly short order. You'll also be moderated, of course, by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. And also moderated by pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Hail, hail, the gang's all here. Marty, with an early email, says, sorry to do this to you right off the bat, but no high quality MP3 tune in stream, or at least I can't get it. Sorry, Marty, I can't do a damn thing about that. I have no control whatsoever over what TuneIn does or doesn't do. I have no control over how the White Rose server stream behaves or doesn't behave. All I can do is send the stream out and hope for the best. So if that's not working, run over to HeadOn.live and grab the stream there, and it'll be high quality because they both go out at the same bit rate. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I do that yet? Okay, well, I have now. And this is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we've got a veritable sticker bush of a veritable sticker bush of thorns to deal with this evening. Yeah, Randy, I know the HQWRS stream is down. Can't do a darn thing about it. So maybe it'll have a miraculous healing or something like that somewhere along the way. The best I can say is go over to HeadOn.live. If the low quality stream just drives you nuts, go over to HeadOn.live and listen there, because of course HeadOn.live will play on any mobile device and it'll play on any laptop or any desktop. It'll just play because it just works. That's my best suggestion. Of course, we begin every program with thanks. Yes, indeed. Thank you very kindly to our subscribers for this 6th day of the month. That includes Brock. Thank you, Brock. Thanks as well to Kitty in Boston. Thank you very kindly to Chris in Germany. And thanks very kindly to Kim. Thank you, Kim. And thank you very much to Laurel. Thanks for being a partial sponsor of the program. To our buddy Bob. Thank you very much to Alex for being a partial sponsor of the program. And thank you to Don in West Tennistan. Yes, thank you, one. And all. That's how we keep the program afloat especially when we do weeks like we've had this first week of December, when fundraising, well, let's see, we're in the fourth day of the first week of December, and the fundraising goal is kind of stuck right there at, let's see, $690. I was kind of hoping it wasn't that, but no, that's what it is. We're at $690 in fundraising. We've got about $500 in first of the month bills due, and so that's where we stand, and hopefully we can take some of that down. If we could maybe finish off Monday's fundraising and finish off Tuesday's, you know, that'd be like $280. Wednesdays would make it $480, and then today, yeah, $680. $680 is where we stand. And this is, of course, non-commercial. This is non-commercial radio. This is the radio that doesn't have any sponsors to speak of, except for the people who sponsor the program for the rest of the community. So run on over if you feel like it. And by the way, I was I forgot something. 660. I had forgotten about. I forgot to include what Tracy had done the other night. So yeah, 660. The TuneIn app is working for me, Tracy says. Well, thank you. Thank you for letting me know that. I'll send a note at the end of the program and let Ben Birch know that the White Rose server is behaving bizarrely. But, you know, that's why we've got two different server streams that go out. If the White Rose stream isn't good, almost 100% of the time, the head-on.live stream will be good. And it works like gangbusters. So just go over to headon.live and, you know, it's just right there. Click, boom, plays. No problem. Subject line, egads. Darlene in Connecticut says, I'm offering a $100 challenge then this evening. Let's get this shit taken care of. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you so very much. That is huge. And, maybe it's because it's December and it's the holiday season and people are just tapped out. I don't know. But there's a $100 challenge on the table, and that'll go a long way toward, if that's met, that'll take us down to 460. So that would be huge. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you very kindly. One moment. All right, so there we have it. We'll just see what happens over the course of the evening. Now, it being Thorn in the Side Thursday, where do we begin? Here's a fun one. Okay, I'm lying. It's not fun. There's nothing fun about it. But it is, at the very least, interesting. Joe Manchin did something unusual this week. He voted against a coal whore. Now, in the long run, it didn't matter because the vote wound up being, the Republicans won. What we're talking about is a nominee to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is also known as FERC. Now, Julius Geezer nominated a coal whore by the name of Bernard McNamee, a fossil fool. This guy has a history, and there's, you know, it's indisputable. This guy has a history of favoring hydrocarbons over any and all other energy sources. Just a fact. He was nominated to replace an outgoing member of FERC by the name of Robert Powelson. Powelson bailed on FERC in August because he wanted to run a water company trade group. But among other things, Powelson had also, even though a Republican, challenged Julius Geezer's determination to artificially, to keep a bunch of coal-fired power plants and nuclear plants on artificial life support. So McNamee had to be approved by the Senate of the United States. Now we know who runs the Senate of the United States. Chinless Mitch McConnell. And we know how the numbers shake out there. Well, it was a party line vote today. And Bernard McNamee will indeed serve on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission through the 30th day of June 2020. That's a year and a half in which to completely screw the future of the entire planet, which I'm sure he will do. McNamee is a full-throated white-wing freak. He ran something called Life Powered. You may recall we ran one of their stupid ads about why solar energy and wind energy don't really work. He also was the director of the Center for 10th Amendment Action and the Texas Public Policy Foundation, which sounds fairly benign until you realize that it's just another POS hydrocarbon the think sink tank that has a primary goal of destroying life on Earth. Well, he's on the commission now. I mean, it was a loss, but it's a little shocking because lo and behold, my senator, the senior senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin, allegedly a Democrat, well, he voted against McNamee, making the final vote tally 50-49. Now, prior to the vote being taken, Joe had said that, well, gosh, he sure did support McNamee because we've got to have all of the above energy portfolio that includes coal. And coal is West Virginia, and West Virginia is coal. And coal keeps the lights on. You know the way he talks with that sort of low, smooth, semi-monotonous kind of mouthful of maple syrup. Right. Well, he voted against him. After saying he'd vote for him, he changed his tune and voted against him. And it would have been 51-48. Instead, it was 50-49. So it didn't make any overt difference. Remember, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, so we're going to have to... There's a handful of thorns coming. McNamee came into the FERC nomination... from the Department of Energy. And that's where he sort of midwifed the Chlamydia Claudius regime's plan to bail out a bunch of dying coal-fired power plants and nuke plants. About 11 months ago, FERC said to that idea. So you can see why maybe he was sent over to FERC. Here's where it gets interesting. Why why would Joe Manchin do that? Well, ostensibly, the reason, well, Joe Manchin gave it, and he said it was because he could no longer vote to confirm McNamee because he had watched a video where McNamee denied human causation for climate change. And this, of course, was a video of the Texas Public Policy Foundation meeting back last February. And he declared, fossil fuels are not something dirty. And carbon dioxide ain't a real pollutant. And when he's got a little boy, and when his boy goes to school and they try to talk about that there climate change, well, he said, I tell my boy, you just deny it when that smarty pants science lady teacher starts a trying to talk about that dirty unchristian business. You just deny it. I added the dirty unchristian business part. And then, lo and behold, the next thing you know, he's getting a nomination, McNamee is, to be a member of FERC. McNamee is a nightmare. He's an ideologue. He has no business anywhere near national energy policy. And he appears to be one of those dimwits, like one of his fellow Texans. Who was it? Lamar Smith, maybe, who said, well, if carbon dioxide, it was featured on this program years ago. He said it in the House of Representatives. If carbon dioxide is such a poison, how come they put it in soda pop? Oh, really? Happened. It was the same was later echoed by, and this tells you how old the quote is, by Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman. But that's the mindset from whence this McNamee goober emerges. And Joe Manchin found himself some spine after he saw that video and just could no longer support McNamee, especially since his vote would not actually be necessary to McNamee's confirmation. I must be a terribly, terribly cynical person, mustn't I? Yes. Well, there's a reason. See, Joe, there are things that Joe wants as a senator, now that he's all reelected and stuff, and we sent him back, we West Virginians sent him back to the Senate, hoping that states like, Missouri and North Dakota wouldn't fuck up and not send their Democrats back. Indiana. For once, West Virginia got it right while other states did the screwing. But we're not going to have, we came so close. We're not going to have a majority in the Senate. And like I said, Joe's vote would have only made it 51-48 instead of 50-49. Because heroic opponent of Donald Trump, Jeff Flake, said aye. And heroic opponent of Donald Trump, Bob Corker, said aye. And noted Republican moderate Susan Collins said, aye. And libertarian ophthalmologist Rand Paul said, You get that, yeah. That's some opposition, that Republican opposition to Donald Trump. And new and different kind of Republican Ben Sasse of Nebraska said, And of course, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, said, So no Republicans were going to come over and make it 50-50 so that Mike Pencilneck Geek would have to cast the tie-breaking vote. No, of course not. Jesus, that bunch must be scared to death of Mitch McConnell. Or else, it's possible that maybe they're just Republicans. Maybe Republicans don't give a great big galloping fuck about whether we roast the planet to the point that it can no longer support human life. That could be it, too. In fact, I think that is it. This is one of those moments where we have to discern the spirits. Dang it. No more tequila. And we've got to figure out how much of the GOP is, maggoty versus what things that the GOP does are just the same old nasty Republican, vile, hateful bullshit that they've been perpetrating all along. I would suggest to you that this vote is the latter and not the former. They don't care. They don't care what happens to the billions of people on this planet because they're that far down the igum-foo rabbit hole. I got mine. F you. But Joe Manchin, well, Joe has a sense for the dramatic, and he knows a meaningless gesture when he's offered the opportunity to make one. And so I had to go back to a story from a few days ago. Because like I said, there are things in this life that Joe wants. No, not a motorcycle or a big old boat. He's got those. Not gajillions of dollars. He's got that. Not a cushy position for his daughter at the top of a pharmaceutical company. He's got that too. Joe wants more power. Because the more power Joe has in the Senate, the more money he can shake out of the various and sundry energy lobbies. And so there's been sort of a trial balloon floated that Chuck Schumer, and when I think about the shit that Nancy Pelosi has had to put up with, and the shit that Chuck Schumer doesn't and hasn't had to put up with, even though one of the two people is highly effective and the other is barely effective at all, we can guess which is hit which, I trust. Well, Chuck Schumer's thinking about making, because Maria Cantwell of Washington doesn't want to be chair of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee of the Senate of the United States. She would be, but she's moving over to budget. Because there's a lot more power to be wielded there, and you can bring a lot more bacon home to your constituency in that spot. So guess who wants to be the chair of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee of the Senate of the United, or not chair, he'll be the ranking member, I'm sorry. Ranking member. That means when it comes time for the Energy and Natural Resources Committee to speak, the person, the Democratic minority, the person doing the speaking will be Joe Manchin. Yeah, Joe wants that ENR ranking member position. Because there, he can keep the other members in line and he can throw his vote over with the Republican majority to make sure that nothing that could actually make a difference about climate change or affect the tormented lives of people who have to live with coal extraction can ever make it out of committee. That's why Joe voted that way. Absolutely. Up in the far frozen north, our buddy Ron says, "You're in my head." Would I be excessively cynical to suggest that Manchin knew his vote wasn't absolutely critical to getting the asshole of the day confirmed, and this gives him an out with the progressive Democrats in West Virginia? And I suspect his no vote was discussed in advance with the real powers in the Senate. Right, right, and right, Ron. It was strictly symbolic, utterly meaningless, and guaranteed Joe Manchin the ranking membership on the Energy and Natural Resources Committee, where, say, a bill to end mountaintop removal might go if it was ever actually introduced in the Senate. It would mean that in 2020, if our dreams come true, and we work our asses off, and we get ourselves a majority in the Senate, because the Republicans have to defend 20 states, it would mean that, and the Democrats have to defend like, you know, 10, something, 13 maybe. It would mean that if we get a majority in 2020, Joe could say, "Nope, I'm the ranking member on Energy and Natural Resources, and now that we got the majority, I'm going to be the chairman. And ain't nothing going to do hurt to coal ever going to come out of this year committee." Bless her heart, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who has recently been elected to the House, that would be the House, not the Senate, was so disturbed by the potential for Joe Manchin to be the ranking member on ENR in the Senate that she spoke out. This past Friday at a press briefing on Capitol Hill, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said, "I have concerns, because I don't think we should be financed by the industries that we're supposed to be legislating and regulating." What she was referring to was the fact that since he entered the Senate in 2010, Joe Manchin has brought home $1,148,000 worth of prime bacon from oil, gas, and coal lobbyists and PACs and various and sundry executives. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez understands that, being the proponent of the Green New Deal, that Joe Manchin would be in a position to stop it dead in its tracks. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I misspoke earlier. Maria Cantwell isn't going to budget. She's going to... she wants to be the ranking member on the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee. That space came open when Bill Nelson lost in Florida, because West Virginia got it right and Florida fucked it up. You know, with the help of a little voter suppression and some neo-Nazis and assorted Klansmen and whatnot. Here's the funny thing. Other members of Energy and Natural Resources include Ron Wyden of Oregon, Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, Bernie Sanders of Vermont, and they've all got more seniority than Joe Manchin does. But not one of them have said they're even remotely interested in having the ranking membership, or the ranking member seat, on Energy and Natural Resources. So it's not just about Joe's ambition. It's about Well, it's about those three senators' willingness to do the right thing for the nation. Bernie in particular. Bernie stood in the debates during the Democratic primary process, and I was very proud of him when he said that the single greatest threat facing the United States and, in fact, the world is climate change. If that's the case, then Bernie should be wanting, actively seeking to be the ranking minority member on energy and natural resources so that he can mount challenges to the Republicans when they, you know, try to bend, get down, they put their knee pads on and get down and on the floor and start filleting the coal industry. So people are, but people are organizing and people are doing the hard work, and I send out thanks from here in the hills and hollers of Appalachia, which these people probably don't even know exist. But dozens of people from an organization called Sunrise New York and Indivisible Brooklyn got together and they rallied outside of the Manhattan office of Chuckie Schumer and demanded that he make sure Manchin is not the ranking member on the minority side of energy and natural resources. God, Joe wants it so bad, though. Oh, he wants it. Araceli Jimenez of Sunrise, New York, gave a statement on Monday and said, as momentum builds for a Green New Deal, Senator Schumer has an opportunity to appoint a ranking member who will help the legislation we need to preserve the planet for our generation. And so now, hopefully, it has become abundantly clear why Joe Manchin did what he did today. Well, see, Chuck, I can vote against the coal industry. I voted against that guy because, well, he said humans don't contribute to climate change. See, Chuck? See? And then he turned on his butter wouldn't melt in his mouth voice, and he said, when Politico asked him about it all, he said, in regard to environmental groups who oppose his ranking member ambitions, tell them to please come talk to me. If you talk to them, tell them Senator Manchin is open. Bullshit. I've had that little song sung to me. We have had that little song sung to us right here in West Virginia. Oh, he'll meet with you all right, and then he'll fuck you. Because he's going to do what he's going to do. Prior to the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, there were people, Democrats, who said, listen, I have it firsthand. Joe Manchin knows exactly how we feel about Kavanaugh. Democrats, the people that Joe Manchin needed to get into office. In fact, one of my friends had lunch with his wife, and she's going to tell him. So I feel good about this. And then Joe Manchin fucked us. Like I knew Joe Manchin would do all along. So, you know, That's a thorn. That's a thorn. Don't you think? I do. Yeah. But, you know, if you're inclined, and say, let's say you're a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation in the state of New York, maybe, because... Stop telling us who to send emails to, Bob. Maybe you could take a couple of minutes and write an email to your senator, Chuck Schumer, and say, Dear Chuckie, don't you dare let Joe Manchin anywhere near the ranking membership of Energy and Natural Resources. Don't you dare. Because, and I mean, I'm not drafted. Quit telling us what words to use in the emails that you shouldn't be telling us to send, Bob. You could say, perhaps, I have friends in West Virginia, and I know for a fact that Joe Manchin doesn't give a good goddamn. Okay, don't use that. Doesn't give a tinker's damn. That's D-A-M, not D-A-M-N. We can't have any swearing in any emails. It might upset Joe's delicate sensibilities, but a tinker's damn is not a dirty word. Joe doesn't give a tinker's damn about the well-being of his own constituents and has worked for years to poison them. By letting coal companies continue to blow up their communities and pour poison dust down over them. But that's only if you feel like it and you're a New Yorker. On the other hand, let's say maybe you live in Vermont.
Quit telling us how to email senators if we live in Vermont, Bob.
Maybe you live in Vermont. Maybe you could fire off a letter to Bernie. And you could say, hey, Bern, you've got more seniority than Joe Manchin, and you know that Joe Manchin will be nothing but a wholly owned subsidiary of the fucking coal and gas industries if he gets his hands on the ranking membership at Energy and Natural Resources, Bern. Step up. Say you want it. You've got more seniority than he does. If you say you want it, you'll get it. You kind of have to. Walk the walk, Bernie. That's if you live in Vermont. If you live in Michigan, you could say, Dear Debbie Stabenow, you've got more seniority than Joe Manchin. Why don't you ask for the ranking membership position on Energy and Natural Resources? Because after all, I know for a fact from a dear friend of mine who spoke with you that you have said on more than one occasion that you absolutely despise mountaintop removal. Well, what a great place the ranking membership of this Energy and Natural Resource Committee would be for you to put meat on those bones. Right, Deb? That's if you're in Michigan. If you're out in Oregon, and I know for a fact, we've got a goodly... You know, if there was ever a place to hold a horn in, as much as I'd love to hold one here in almost level West by God, Virginia, Stan, when you look at the people who listen to this program, probably the smartest bet would be to hold it in somewhere on the West Coast. Yeah. But that's just an aside. But if you're in Oregon, you could write to Ron Wyden and say, hey, Ron, you care about climate change. You said you care about climate change. Well, why won't you step up and ask for the ranking membership at Energy and Natural Resources? Because if Joe Manchin gets in there, he's just going to do things that you hate. How about it, Ron? Meanwhile, another Ron says, Chucky's out regarding Bernie. He's an independent, not a Democrat. Built-in excuse. Well, true enough. Yeah, I know, Randy. Randy said, fulfilling the role of little ray of fucking sunshine this evening, we have Randy in PA. Don't do it, Schumer, or what, Bob? We'll vote for the Republicans, or the Green Party, or, God help us, the Libertarians? No, just maybe one of these days there's going to be something you want, Chuck, and we won't get behind you. I mean, there's always that. Right? Yeah. So, you know, it's worth your consideration. And again, kudos to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for going outside what are supposed to be boundaries and talking about what needs to happen in the Senate. Good for you. Good for you on this one. Proud of you. In fact, I just had a note coming in from Steve in New York. Writing with his tongue firmly in his cheek. Steve writes, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, clearly the little Latina neophyte from Queens, Bronx just doesn't understand how things work. Yeah, or maybe she's sincere in her desire to try to save the ability of this planet to support human life. Yeah. Jack in Shreveport points out, yeah, and it's true, subject line coal. Federal report Tuesday said U.S. is using less coal this year since any year since 1979, and that is absolutely true. The problem is, globally, coal use is going up, not down. And as long as there is a market for coal, they will continue to blow up Appalachia, put it on boats, and send it to where the market for coal is. And in fact, in some ways, they can make more money on it that way. Yeah, absolutely. It's true. Art of Knowing Words wordplay. Steve in New York says, yeah, Joe will definitely be rank. He is that in a bag of rancid chips. Oh, by the way, I had a note in. I'm trying to figure out how best to handle this. Had a note from Charlene after Darlene's challenge. Charlene said, why leave all the fun to Friday night? Here's a $100 challenge, and if it's met tonight, I'll add another 60. Best, Charlene. Okay, that's huge. So we will treat Darlene's challenge as having been met, and Charlene, having met it, issuing a new challenge. So there's a $100 challenge on the table to be, which, if met this evening, will turn into a net $260 improvement. Which will go, so let's see, between the two challenges, let's see, one. We could take out a, because I'm having trouble with the whole maths thing. We could take out a big hunk of the deficit that we have this evening, and I could get a bill paid at the very least. So thank you, Charlene. One challenge met, next challenge on the clock. So, I don't know. Let's see what we can do between, say, now and the top of the hour. That's 17 minutes away. Can we do that? Can we knock down a $100 challenge in 17 minutes? That would be about a little more than 10 bucks a minute or so. Or about. Again, math, me, not good thing. Darlene in Connecticut says, I'm very impressed with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The Repiglicans are afraid of her, so that's why they keep attacking her. She's fearless and on a mission. I'm not religious, but I say bless her young heart and soul, and I do too. I would dearly love to be able to get, you know, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act will most likely be reintroduced in the coming Congress. And it would be great if she jumped out there, being new as she is, and co-sponsored it alongside Representative Yarmuth. Sadly, I don't think she even knows the bill exists, and this is not because she's not knowledgeable, but simply because I think there's so much stuff out there to be done that nobody's probably mentioned poor little suffering Appalachia to her. But it would be great if somebody in her constituency would take it upon themselves to do that little thing.
Anybody out there in her constituency? Anybody out there banged on doors for her? Could you help a hillbilly out?
Stop telling us how to lobby new brand new members of the House of Representatives, Bob.
Yeah. All right. Wow. Okay. We've got dueling challenges now. Darlene in Connecticut just responded and said, "Okay, so I'll in turn meet Charlene's challenge then by donating another $60. Let's keep this going." Well, yeah, let's do keep this going. It would be great if it was if it wasn't just Darlene and Charlene, the ENE sisters, going back and forth at each other. No, I'm kidding because we are. It is beginning to roll in. Thank you, Roberto. There's $20 met of Charlene's challenge, leaving 80 to go. Brian just took us down to $55 to go. Thank you, Brian. So there's $55 to go on Charlene's challenge. If that challenge is met, Charlene's going to kick another 60, and Darlene will kick another 60 on top of that. This is like watching a poker game. I'll see your challenge and I'll raise your challenge. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you very, very kindly. Well, that's probably true. Steve in New York says, subject line, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Here's what it comes down to. Don't fuck with a Puerto Rican woman from the Bronx. That's true. Absolutely true. Mike in Cascadia with a note says, hey, Bob. Hey, Mike. My Senator Maria Cantwell has been a great champion of protecting federal public land. Specifically, she's been the strongest voice in the Senate countering Trump's gutting of our national monuments. Putting Manchin now into that spot is very bad news, especially for chock-full-of-coal Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. Whereas Cantwell fought with Zinke and Orrin Hatch and Trump over that desecration, Joe will probably embrace it. I have no doubt of it whatsoever. The Kiparowitz Plateau within the original Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument is estimated to have 5 to 7 billion tons of recoverable coal. Joe's probably licking his lips at that thought. Sigh, we need to start winning more bigly to stop this madness. I've got an article here about the Kiparowitz Plateau from the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. I'll read it after the program. Thank you for sharing that, Mike. You know, one of the things we have to do...
Stop telling us the things we have to do, Bob.
One of the things we have to do is get a lot better at alliance building. Of course, I've been saying this for 10, 15 years. I really do. After the trip that I took last week, and it was a lot of fun going down to Atlanta. But I realize how much good can be done when people come together from diverse areas and take ideas back with them. And I would love nothing more than to be able to hook up with some of the opponents of the desecration of Grand Staircase and talk about. Again, the thing that we specialize in here, transforming this from an issue about aesthetics, and there are real aesthetic issues. Nobody wants to see Grand Staircase blown away, but to bring to the forefront the human cost associated with something like that. Thank you, Mike. I get it. I do so get it. And, yeah, Joe would put the knee pads on for whoever wants to blow the living bejesus out of Grand Staircase. You can, there is no doubt about it. Dave from Talibandiana with a note. taking us down to $45 to go on Charlene's challenge. Hey, Bob, this is going to take some of my mom's pain away and give it to the Republicans who deserve it. Let's keep the horn going. Your buddy Dave in Taliban, Indiana. Besides, I hadn't heard the term sticker bush in years. I'm getting a good chuckle out of it. Thank you, Dave. Thank you. And our best to your mama. And thank you very kindly to Todd. Thank you, Todd. We are now down to 40. 40 to go to meet the challenge. That's awesome. 30, courtesy of Earther. So we're down to 30 to go. And that's amazing. And once the challenge is met, we'll, maybe during the Green News report coming up here in a couple of minutes, I'll do some I'll do some gazettas and some ciphering and see where we are. So $30, 9 minutes, and that'll knock down the challenges, and that'll be 1, 2, 3. That'll take. I think I just did the cipher, and that'll knock out $420 of the $640, leaving $220 to go to get to come even. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Darlene. Darlene suggesting, how about the sorority of Leans? You have the fraternity of Steves on the male listener side. I'm shooting for a sorority of Leans on the female listener side. I think we need one more Lean, right? Like a Marlene or a Carlene. I've proffered an application for your consideration. We will the home office, Darlene, will consider your will consider the sorority to be in colony status until we can get the third Lean. And you know, it can be another Charlene or it can be another Darlene. We just need three, because we have multiple Steves, multiple Daves, multiple Davids, right? So we need at least three for a full sorority chapter. Yes. So again, 8 minutes, $30, and that'll go a long way toward cutting down on the some of the sweating, and make the week a little bit more. A little less terrifying. Yeah, I've eaten up 50 minutes talking about Joe Manchin, but this is actually important stuff, at least to me, at least to those of us who think that climate change is of grave existential importance. And the slime, you know, that slimy bit of see, you can trust me, Chuck. Because now Chuck can say, hey, listen, Joe doesn't always vote for the coal whores. Look what he did there with the with Hoosie's phallus. They're going on to the FERC. Didn't matter. It was pure, cold-blooded, political calculation. That and nothing more. By the way, Steve in New York, this member of the Greek Council at the Home Office votes yes to grant provisional status to the sorority of Leans. So you've got a majority there. So all we've got to do is find the third Lean, and y'all are in. And we'll put together your secret the secret handshake and the high sign and the whispered password and all of that stuff. Well, we won't. Y'all can. It's your sorority. If only Marveline wasn't such a reliable Republican, and if only she didn't exist primarily in my imagination, we'd be right there. What's that? What's that, Ron, in the far frozen north? Bob, you sell yourself cheap. $10 a minute doesn't even come close to what Stormy Daniels charged at $25,000 for her latest 5-minute performance in a club. I'm not suggesting you don your B-cup butt floss and Johnson's baby oil before the show, but the visual imaging would be hard to ignore. That's a really genteel way of putting it. Hard to ignore. I think we could probably hear the sounds of the vomiting from all the way through the ether itself. So no B cups and butt floss for me. But if it makes you happy imagining it, well, yeah. Because at this point in time, with it being cold outside and everything, yes, I fear that we are done with naked radio until at least May. Darn. That's another reason. If we ever go to video here, naked radio's over. Yeah. Ah, thanks for the endorsement of the sorority. Goes out from Darlene to Steve in New York. Well, hey, and there it is. It's one of those little technological miracles. Randy in PA has informed me that the White Rose Society's high Q stream, high quality stream, has miraculously healed itself somehow. Oh, yeah, there's another lean we could add. We got any Maybellines out there? Oh, Maybelline, why won't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you come through? Yeah, right. Thank you, Ron. Wait a minute. I think that gets a cowbell. Forgot about Maybelline. Jolene? We got any Jolenes? Looking for a Jolene. Jolene going once, Jolene going twice. Yeah, Jolene, I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Yes, Jolene. Behold, we stand at the door and knock. Yeah. So here we are at the top of the hour. We have more thorns to discern. But we will. We'll take a break, and maybe $30 will roll in the next 3 minutes, and that's $10 a minute, just like Ron said. Living large. And we'll finish all of those challenges. Thanks, everybody. Thanks a bunch. And now, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, the Green News Report. You know, because it's Thursday.
It's Thursday, December 6, 2018.
See, I told you.
We are in trouble.
Bad news, global carbon emissions on the rise again.
This movement has really become about something much bigger than just a protest over fuel prices.
France suspends fuel tax hikes after violent protests. Greenland's ice melt has gone into overdrive, new study says. Plus,
as a business leader, but in fact also as a human being, it's vital that we find solutions for this problem.
World's largest shipping company targets 100% zero emissions by 2050.
All of that bad news and a little bit of good news straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We are still not doing enough, nor moving fast enough, to prevent irreversible and catastrophic climate disruption.
Thanks, Chuckles. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, should we start with the good or the bad news today?
Oh, we got both, so let's start with the bad news. As world leaders at the United Nations climate talks in Poland try to hammer out a rule book for countries to cut the greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous man-made climate change, global carbon emissions are now rising again.
Great.
While it had appeared that maybe the world had turned a corner with emissions mostly flat from 2014 to 2016, in 2017, they started growing again, led by China, India, and the U.S.
What happened in 2017 in the U.S.?
But Europe's emissions fell. Emissions have reached a new record high in 2018, according to the Global Carbon Project this week. And worse, the researchers said, global emissions in 2018 are rising at a faster rate than in previous years. Mm-hmm. They compared it to, quote, a speeding freight train with no signs of slowing down.
That's not good news indeed. I hope things get better as we move forward here.
Not yet. Still more bad news. The report highlights the chasm between international pledges to combat climate change versus what countries are actually doing. At UN climate talks this week, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that climate change is already wreaking havoc around the world and is already moving faster than we are, and all nations must do more.
We are in trouble. We are in deep trouble with climate change. It is hard to overstate the urgency of our situation. We are still not doing enough, nor moving fast enough, to prevent irreversible and catastrophic climate disruption. Nor are we doing enough to capitalize on the enormous social, economic, and then environmental opportunities of climate action.
As if to underscore that urgency, a new study finds that Greenland is melting faster than ever before, and it's now off the charts. Using ice core data going back 350 years, researchers in the journal Nature this week say that melting of Greenland's ice sheet has, quote, gone into overdrive in just the last 20 years, and worse, that the rate of Greenland's ice melt continues to accelerate.
I'm trying not to hate you right now, Desi Doyen.
Well, still more bad news. In France, President Emmanuel Macron has temporarily suspended a planned tax hike on diesel fuel, part of a transition to clean energy, after 3 weeks of violent yellow vest demonstrations. While initially triggered by the fuel tax hike, the protests ballooned amid rising anger over economic inequality and stagnating wages. Now on to the good news.
Finally!
In Colorado, Xcel Energy this week became the first major U.S. electric utility to pledge to eliminate its carbon emissions entirely. Xcel will reduce emissions 80% by 2030 in the 8 states where it operates and will transition to 100% zero carbon energy by 2050, a move that analysts labeled a game changer for the utility industry.
We could use a game changer.
Finally, Maersk, the world's largest container shipping company, also pledged to cut its carbon emissions to zero by 2050 to combat climate change. Chief Operating Officer Soren Toft told the Financial Times, quote, we will have to abandon fossil fuels and find a different way to power our assets. In an interview with CNN, Toft said Maersk will have to innovate their entire supply chain, which will take time and ingenuity.
We will need to find new technologies, new innovative ways of basically providing the future efficient ships. These ships are not available today, and that's why we are reaching out, not only announcing this goal, but also saying that this is a call for action. It's a call for action for all constituents in the supply chain to collaborate and to work together.
So he's basically calling for electric ships?
Yes, not only calling for it, they're going to make it happen.
Well, that's good news. If it happens, for much more on all of these stories, good news and bad, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Google Play. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Soon we'll be making another run. The lifeboat.
I don't know who chooses the bumpers, the ins and outs for the Green News Report. I don't know if that's Desi or Brad, but I tell you what, I love it because that was good for a good 10 seconds of chair dancing there. And thanks going out to Kathleen in Mayretta, Georgia. That's how you say it, you know, Mayretta. For taking us down to only $20 to go to finish off Charlene's challenge. Thank you, Kathleen. And a question, Kathleen, not to be too much trouble, but is the big chicken still there? We were talking about that while I was down that way, and I don't know the answer. It was a big thing. I mean, you could even see it, but pilots could see it from the air. the Big Chicken in Marietta. Is it still there? I actually even thought about taking a little detour to show it to Agnes, but not knowing if it was still there or not, I didn't feel confident in my ability to find it. But my God, one of the things we did do on the way out of town after we dropped Chris at the airport is came back into Atlanta, wandered around some of the neighborhoods, little Five Points, Virginia Highlands, places that had been haunts of mine 30 years ago, and then wandered up Northside Parkway across the Chattahoochee River and showed Agnes where my little apartment was right in the flight path of Dobbins Air Force Base, where periodically I would be brought screaming out of my sleep because I've worked a midnight shift by a low-passing jet on the way into Dobbins. And it just blew my mind the way, you know, 30 years doesn't seem like 30 years when you're, no. But the whole area there around Vinings is boom, you know, amazing, amazing. So, Thorn in the Side Thursday, that's where we were, right? And knocking off the last of the $20 of Charlene's challenge as well. We haven't heard from good old Jesse Lee Peterson in a while. Yeah, this is a hockey puck warning to everybody, but it probably has special relevance for the members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, who are people of color, African American, what have you, but in particularly African Americans, because if this pisses me off, this is liable to make y'all want to eat dirt and run rabbits. Jesse Lee Peterson with another Thorn for Thorn in the Side Thursday.
My question is, before Thanksgiving, you had that about those black business people on that, about black people integrating with white for the culture.
You remember,
that?
Yes. Meaning that if they had missed children, then the value of those missed kids would be passed down to the blacks, and black can get better?
Right.
Yes, I remember right. That. Okay.
Well, how did that, my question is, how did the children back in the slavery days that were mixed, how did they better themselves?
They did it because they were not told that they were victims. They were not told that the white people were trying to hold them back. And
they were just slaves because of the one drop rule. But you're not going to hear about the one drop rule from good old Jesse Lee Peterson. No. They couldn't better themselves because they were, well, property. You know, like Sally Hemings, who was actually the sister of the woman that, the very white woman that Thomas Jefferson married. But Jesse Lee Peterson doesn't know any history, and he doesn't know much of anything else, so...
They had good examples. They had good parents and good grandparents who worked hard and did the right thing. Better black people were moral people back then, and they are immoral now. Since the Civil Rights Movement, they have been relying on the government. They feel like victims. They blame everybody else for it.
Whoop! So, just to, because I want to make sure that I heard that right, and you tell me if I didn't. Call, email, what have you. You know, lines are open. People of color were more moral when white people owned them. I mean, that's what he just said, isn't it? Anybody want to join me out in the yard eating dirt and running rabbits? Because that just about beats cats fucking. I mean, yeah, I know. I guess it's a good gig. But after the civil rights movement began depending on the government, I guess, you know, everybody just decided to take a nap in those Paul Ryan welfare hammocks. That just freaking hurts. Yeah, it didn't do Marty any good. Marty says, please, Bob, pass the rum. Not the good stuff, the cheap rot gut. Oh, you want a little blast of Ron Rico, do you there? Yeah. Or, right. Yeah, that'll make you run rabbits. See shit. Whew! Let's hear that again, sports fans.
Black people were moral people back then, and they are immoral now. Since the civil rights movement, they have been relying on the government. They feel like victims. They blame everybody else for their weakness. And they didn't do that prior to the civil rights movement. They were independent.
Didn't a lot of the blacks back then as slavery time? Isn't that why they were so angry at the white people?
No, they weren't angry back then. They only got angry when the civil rights movement started because they were lied to about slavery.
Lied to about slavery. Now, granted, Jesse Lee does not have the entire shelf full of Maker's Mark bottles behind him this time, but I'm pretty sure there's damn well got to be one close at hand. African-American people were not angry during slavery. They only got angry when they were lied to about having the civil rights. I guess Jesse Lee never goes and votes or anything like that. And Jesse Lee's probably still operating on his very own little old green book. Because, I mean, he wouldn't want to be participating in the immoral lie of civil rights now, would he? Jesus, these people.
And all that, but they didn't have that anger when slavery existed, and they didn't have it right after slavery. That's only came about during the civil rights movement when black people started to believe into the lies of the race hustlers.
Believe into the lies of the race hustlers. You know, the race hustlers who wanted children to be able to get a decent education, race hustlers who wanted people to be able to vote, the race hustlers who, well, you know, didn't want people buried in earthen dams after being murdered by the Klan, or didn't want anybody murdered by the Klan, didn't want the Klan to exist, you know, those race hustlers. And look, it's fun to make sport of Jesse Lee Peterson, but once again, I return to my all too common theme that, you know, there are people out there who listen to him and take this clown seriously. But he's getting his wingnut welfare, so I guess he don't need none of them civil rights. Mm-mm. No. By the way, hey, this blew right past me, but Darlene pointed it out, hey, given the contribution from Kathleen, then I think we've got our sorority, Darlene, Charlene, and Kathleen. Don't matter if the E's are together or separated by the N. More people are welcome. So, yes, the Home Office, in consultation with the Archons, has determined that there henceforth shall be a sorority of liens. Mark your calendar for this here auspicious day. The 14 minutes past the hour on the 6th day of December 2018. And now we're down to only $10 to go on Charlene's challenge because we just got a new friend at Patreon. Thank you, Rhonda. Thank you very, very kindly. What an evening. What an evening. So with that, let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Wrong button. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, is that you?
This is me.
Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Yeah, this is Otto Deshawn. Something happened to my balls. I can only speak lowly like this. So you'll have to excuse me if I sound like some Gorka just got castrated. but that's the way I feel today. Actually, I called to give you a pledge of $50.
Oh, well, so thank you.
I sent you an email, but I guess you didn't get it.
I know, so it didn't. I don't see it here. I've been watching. Maybe I missed one.
Yeah, but I said, hey, and I flagged you in chat. So, I mean, I just thought I'd call you and kind of punk you for a sec there. But I had a really funny idea is that I want to do a comic book about some guy who's so ugly. That
how ugly is he?
No, me. But I'm joking. But it's sort of like the Monty Python joke about having the funniest joke that could kill the enemy. It's the same idea, but you'd wheel this guy in at the Republican convention in 2020, and then half the one-third of the audience just dies on you. It's kind of like, oh, okay, we got rid of a good portion of people. I don't want to, show any hatred towards Republicans. I don't want to pull a weapon out because I'm not into guns. But, if there's some way we could get rid of these people sooner, and they all look like they have really bad health, they eat poorly and stuff. So all you have to do is kind of, scare them, and maybe they'll, die. What do you think?
It kind of sounds a little bit like the plot to that incredibly thick book from the 1990s, the masterwork by David Foster Wallace called Infinite Jest.
What's the name of it?
Infinite Jest.
Oh, nice. Huh.
And it centers on, I can't remember perfectly, but I think there's a film or something that just sort of runs through the underground, and it's so funny that everybody who watches it dies laughing.
Great. See, that's the idea, but this is, of course, all humor. I'm just kind of like, my whole thing with Republicans, and hearing these people in Wisconsin and North Carolina, that whole thing, they might have to go back to a primary on that congressional candidate. But it's like, what's with these people? You're dying. You're dead. Change your tune. Read a book. I can't, and then there are so many people that follow these people. But North Carolina, apparently, it's so gerrymandered. It's just a mess. That state is a mess, and Wisconsin's a mess. And Scott Walker's leading that state in a big mess.
It's such a mess that there's no way to describe what's going on in Wisconsin except to call it a coup, Otto.
Yeah, it is a coup. And they're so brazen about it. But don't they realize this is just going to hurt them down the road? 5, 6, 7 years down the road, people are going to go, well, I don't want these people in my in any state senate or House seats, what's the point?
But in a way, and of course, this does not apply to Wisconsin because Wisconsin has a prior history of good government. But that thesis that I developed while Agnes and I were wandering around the Southeast, that, how much work, what would it even look like to show the South what can happen to it if they ever do have good governance? What would happen to South Carolina if for once in over, 1787, that's 13, 8, 21, 30. In 231 years, what if for the first time in 231 years, the state of South Carolina actually had good governance? Uh-oh, wait a minute. Hang on, Otto. The damn thing, the phone went nuts on me. Just a second. I don't know why the Bluetooth drops, but it does. Just a sec. Hang on. Working. Not yet. There, now you're okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. It wasn't you, it was me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you started breaking up. I couldn't hear you.
Well, no,
but you were mentioning
it. No, what I was saying is what would happen if for the first time in 237 years South Carolina had good governance, or Georgia, or Alabama?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those states they're stuck in their patterns, and it's going to take forever. It's like the Cindy Hyde Smith ascension to the Senate in Louisiana, or Mississippi. She's part of the old past, but those states are going to take forever to change. And that's what's so disconcerting is because they keep underfunding education, they're just producing people who can, they're maybe illiterate, but, they're just creating a wage slave society. And that's what these Republicans want. It's ridiculous. Michigan voted against trying to repeal union rules just today or yesterday. I mean, they're pulling stuff to make everything even messier once the Democrats
get in. They're trying to burn the crops and salt the earth on their way out as they retreat.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like what the Germans did when they were when they had to leave Russia. They're just
History nerd moment, Otto. It goes back even further. Those are called Fabian tactics, or Fabian, F-A-B-I-A-N tactics, and it goes all the way back to the ancient Romans, where you deprive the enemy of any sort of ability to support itself from the land that they conquer. Among other things, good old Vlad Tepic went on to become Dracula, did the same thing to Mehmet II. When he attacked the Ottoman Turks back in the 13th century or whenever it was. You burn the fields, you kill the livestock, and you starve the army that way.
All right.
Sorry, just a little history nerdism.
Yeah, no, you're right, and it's a tactic that's been used, since the beginning of warfare. So,
but that's what they're more than willing to do. Now, of course, this clown in North Carolina has been stone cold busted by one of his own relations.
Right.
Saying, "Oh yeah, no, we know exactly what he did," and yeah.
Yeah,
but the question is, I mean, let's talk about some states that function fairly well. Let's look, say, at Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen any reports of riots in the streets up there. In fact, I have, by virtue of this program, we have several on the ground correspondents in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and it seems to be going fairly well up there. And what would be involved in transferring governance like that onto a failed state like, say, Alabama or Mississippi, the Mississippi and Arkansas, the ultimate in failed states, and West Virginia, another failed state? And what would the people do when they started experiencing the benefits of it?
Well, they wouldn't. Revert back to where they were, obviously. So what you're seeing in Wisconsin is a direct reaction because Wisconsin was a progressive state, and I don't know if it was Robert La Follette was in Wisconsin or maybe he was Minnesota.
No, that was Wisconsin.
That's Wisconsin. Yeah, so he was a progressive Republican in his day, but it has a strong history of being a blue state. And I think what's happening now in Wisconsin, the outrage is that people were once used to this. And you're right, it's a coup. They're grabbing that power, and it's so brazen. I mean, Scott Walker, I've watched shows on YouTube about this guy and how they underfund the highway department and line their own pockets. And you'll drive through Wisconsin, you'll see highway projects that are not finished. And they look like they've been standing there for quite a while. A road that kind of messed up. There's still some equipment, but nobody's working. This is the state is just, and it's gone through this since when did he come in? 2010?
God, it seems like he's been governor forever.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's kind of really ruined the state, but I think the guy that's really ruined his state was Brownback, Kansas, what he did to the education system. But to a
large extent, didn't the Kansans sort of begin to wake up?
Oh yeah, yeah, and they got a blue. They have a governor now who's Democrat. But I'm surprised Kansas is not doing the same kind of crap, or maybe they've already have everything sewn up the way they want it. So if it does go blue, it's going to be a pain to turn it to assist people who are, at the bottom sector of society, who need some help. I mean, my whole thing with being a progressive, it's the safety net. If somebody doesn't want to support the safety net, I'm not going to vote for them because there's so many people who are homeless. I mean, we have 15,000 people in Portland, Oregon, who are homeless. And just 2 weeks ago, a 70-year-old woman was shot. She was sleeping in her little tent next to Burnside. She was shot by a random assassin who killed another guy on Burnside itself just because he wanted to. There's no reason in our society that a woman who's 70 years old, homeless, is living in a tent homeless. I mean, it's incomprehensible. Even in Oregon, because everybody comes here to a blue state, they're familiar with these crappy states they're from, and they come here thinking they're going to find something. But the job market is really tight. I'm lucky. I'm retired, but it's not easy getting a really good job. A good paying job in Oregon. But that's beside the point.
Well, I don't know that it is beside the point. It seems to be kind of the point.
But in case
you were wondering, the Republicans have decided that one of the things they can do is screw over hungry people in order to provide the corporate welfare and the bullshit so-called tax relief that they've been that they've been hustling. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Among other things, let's see, here we go. Over in the Republican Senate, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, and Jim Snowballs in I Have a Snowball in January Inhofe of Oklahoma have introduced a new piece of legislation, Otto, that they call the Wall Act. And it authorizes $25 billion U.S. American dollars to fully fund Julius Geyser's idiotic wall.
Oh God!
Now, they find the money for this by making it harder for low-income Americans to access things like the child tax credit and the earned income tax credit, or to get food.
Food stamps.
And food stamps would be limited only to people who are citizens, people who are here legally, but, permanent resident, so-called aliens. Sorry, no soup for you. No ramen for you.
Okay.
And that's, that's what passes for Republican fiscal policy in this country in 2018. And it's evil, and it's ugly, and it's filthy, and it's nasty. And by the way, I just now got your second email. I did not get the first one.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to take any airtime because I don't really have much to say tonight except that I'm just watching this news about Wisconsin, North Carolina, and why not let Bob know that I made a pledge, but It's just I get so depressed, and I can't handle the news any longer. I could not watch any of that funeral stuff on Bush Sr. without thinking about all the crap that his son did. I could not watch these people even in that pew. I mean, I'm not much of a Obama disliker, but I was disappointed with Obama. But the more I read about Clinton and the Clintons, I mean, it's just this corporate coup.
in the White House and in Washington. And I don't know the law that was passed in 76 that removed limitations on campaign contributions. Maybe you knew more about that, but I was reading somewhere it kind of started with that, that they felt that the more money, if you stifle money, that you're somehow suppressing free speech.
That's one of those bad acid nightmares that originated in the bowels of the white wing think tankery. This idea that speech, that money is speech, and that the way that a wealthy person speaks is not with his or her voice, but with his or her wallet.
Right, influence.
And of course, the rest of us are free to speak with our wallets too, if we can only just ever get as rich as they are.
Right.
And they presented this false dichotomy that, well, you know, this affects corporations and unions. Unions are free to give billions of dollars too. The only problem is unions are never going to have that kind of money. I mean, the whole and this is a history lesson that goes back to the Powell memo of 1972, when before he became a Supreme Court justice, Lewis Powell authored a roadmap whereby American white wing business interests would fund a so-called conservative infrastructure, because they knew that our side could never go dollar for dollar with them because we don't have the damn dollars.
Right.
I mean, you mentioned the North Carolina case in particular, Otto. This guy, according to the reporting, was writing check after check after check to this fraud merchant, this guy who was dummying up the results.
Right.
And he was able to do that because he had lots and lots of money to do it with.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, they mentioned that character. He had wads of bills in his pocket.
Sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's like it's a different kind of carpetbagger. It's this guy whose only interest is that 1%. And that's it. That's all they're about. It's that 1%. And they're the bottom feeders. On that light note.
All right. Well, it's good to hear from you, Otto. And by the way, I did some ciphering. So thanks to you, we finished Charlene's challenge, and we are now only $180 away from being all the way square up to this evening on this first week of December. So thank you very, very, very kindly.
I'm good. And you've got one more day. So I'll tune in tomorrow. And thanks for what you do, Bob. Take care.
Oh, thank you, Otto. You take care. Have a great evening, my friend.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. And onward from there. So, hey, the program's halfway over, and we got $180 to go, and then tomorrow will just be the regular $200. Wouldn't that be freaking awesome? Yes. Yes, it would. You know, 18 at 10, 10 at 10 at 18. However we do it, we can. Well, even as I was sitting here, I paid one bill, so that was awesome, just breathtakingly. Because I hate worrying about this shit, but it can't. Sometimes I know it can't be helped. Let's run over and check in with Tracy now. Before I go to Tracy, a quick note from Ron and Raleigh regarding Jesse Lee Peterson. Let me get this straight, says Ron. You understand that white folks have never gotten anything from the government. It's only we shiftless black folks that have depended on the government for all that largesse. How does one man manufacture this kind of bullshit out of whole cloth? Well, you know, you open up the bottle and then you open up the mic, Ron. And you just say whatever it is that you think will, in Jesse Lee Peterson's case, please the white man. Because white Republicans love hearing that African Americans are just, as you put it, shiftless. It confirms their bias and makes sure that Jesse Lee Peterson's check clears every week when he makes that long walk to the teller window. That's how that operates. And, you know, never mind the fact that more white people collect welfare benefits than anybody else in this whole entire country. Yeah. And by the way, David in South Carolina with the subject line, Bush died. I do not want to ever hear any more white people criticizing black folks for funeralizing for too long. Ding. Yes. Dave from Taliban, Indiana says, am I missing it, or did Jesse Lee end up saying my family is amoral because I'm of European extraction and my ex-wife, the beloved Christine, is of African ancestry? I love my entire family. I'm offended by Jesse Lee's so-called fought cannonball from the maker's mark and gave him the Evan Williams bottle. And give him the, give him the Evan Williams bottle instead. That's Dave from Taliban, Indiana. I would suggest he just lay off the sauce altogether if it was me. Meanwhile, over to the other line where Tracy awaits. Hey, Tracy.
Hi, Bob.
I love it when it starts with a laugh.
Because while I was on hold, because I don't remember ever hearing about who Jesse Lee Peterson is, and so I went to the interweb tube and looked him up.
He's a piece of work.
And he's a Negro. Because when I heard I'm reading.
No fair, Tracy. No fucking fair.
He's a Negro. And I'm just reading about him. And I'm like, because when I first heard him, you know, on the clip that you played, I just thought he was just a, you know, your normal guy in a wool cracker. You know, but no, he's, you know, saying things like thank God for slavery because it brought blacks out of Africa to America.
And gave him Christianity too.
Gave him Christianity. Who was that at, back in slavery? Oh, what was her name? The black woman who wrote the poem. Oh, Christ.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
You know who I'm talking about. And she was thanking, you know, her captors for, you know, bringing her out of, you know, the savagery of being, you know, a black person and you know, Jesus, because if it hadn't been for, you know, thank God they saved her for being in Africa. I know
who you're talking about, and I'm desperately trying to find her right now.
Well, please, because her poem is awesome.
No, she did beautiful work, but yeah.
That poem that she wrote was just like, oh, please find her, because
Phyllis Wheatley.
Thank you. This Phyllis Wheatley. Yes. Yes, yes, Phyllis fucking Weasley. Okay, I mean, like you said, she did, you know, great stuff, but it's like, ooh, sister girl, no. It's like that, you know, it's not a good thing that, you know, you were, you know, brought over here in chains and all that because, you know.
And by the way, brought to, you know, not Charleston, South Carolina, Boston.
Okay.
In 1761, when John Wheatley bought her as a gift, mm-hmm. as a gift for his wife, Susanna. What to give to the white woman who has everything?
Has everything. A negress. Yes.
But they taught her to write, and they taught her to walk and talk and act just like a blooming lady. She taught her English. She was brought from Senegal, and they made a Christian out of her and gave her a little bit of Latin and taught her some ancient history and some mythology and some classical literature.
Mm-hmm. You know, they
and long about 1765, she started writing poetry.
Mm-hmm. It's you know, it is so, when you hear people like Jesse Lee Peterson, and as being, you know, quiet as his kept up, I don't know if you know this, but I'm black. So
shh. We had everybody fooled.
Damn it, I know. I'm sorry. You know, I try to keep that on the DL, but
yeah, so I've got a little Phyllis Wheatley poetry here.
Please, because I was looking for the poem, but I can't find it.
The book was published as Poems on Various Subjects, Religious and Moral, by Phyllis Wheatley, Negro Servant to Mr. John Wheatley of Boston in New England.
Oh, okay.
London, printed for A. Bell, bookseller, Aldgate, and sold by Messrs. Cox and Barry, King Street, Boston, MDCCLXXIII. 1773, and she wrote, "On being brought from Africa to America, 'twas mercy brought me from my pagan land, taught my benighted soul to understand that there's a God, that there's a Savior too. Once I redemption neither sought nor knew, some view our sable race, sable, with scornful eye. Their color is a diabolic dye. Remember, Christians, Negroes, black as Cain, may be refined and join the angelic train."
Black as Cain, as in Cain and Abel?
Yeah, yeah. Remember, God punished Cain for killing Abel by turning him into a black guy.
Into a Negro.
God was doing that all the time, because he did that to Ham, too, right after the boys got off the ark.
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm going to make all you folks black. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, my Lord! I mean, you know, to listen to Jesse Lee Peterson is just... Like I said, it was so much easier when I thought he was white. And then I looked him up, and I'm like, oh, man. There's one. It's just like something he said about Obama hating white people and going after Jesse Jackson and you know, the race hustlers. And all. I mean, okay. When they start, people like him and Larry Elder and Corleone Noir and...
No, you got to say Corleone Noir in a kind of W.C. Fields voice there.
Noir.
Noir.
Yes. And it's like you...
Or if you want to, you can just translate it and just call him Black Bowel.
Did you say Black Bowel?
Yeah.
As in bowel movement?
Yeah, Corleone Noir, Black Bowel.
Oh. Yes. See... That, because see, the thing is,
I mean, maybe he's angling for a Marvel movie or something.
I don't, you know,
Black Panther, and along comes Black Bowel, and he's got a whole bunch of guns and stuff
and full of shit.
Yeah,
you know, I just because there was another thing. I was going down a rabbit hole with our boy Jesse Lee Peterson, and then I found a tweet about some article saying that white liberals are more race or more condescending to African Americans than conservatives, and that conservatives.
Well, how nice for you, Tracy.
Thank you, Bob.
See, there I was being a condescending liberal.
Being a condescending liberal. And I'm like, and he's like, well, and conservatives tell it like it is. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. They tell you that you're a nigger. They tell you that
Wait. You left out the shiftless part.
Yeah, it's the shiftless Negro. They tell you that you are less than by evidence of, Dope 45 and the birtherism thing that he did to Barack Obama. I mean, the writing is on the wall. And yes, I have run into, I try not to say I have run into condescending white people with the liberal guilt, white guilt and stuff like that. And I don't think when, you know, I don't think it's done with malice. I just think that it's done with because a lot of these people, especially white people with money who think they're doing, you know, the wonderful things of doing what they do as white people, I think it's because most of them really don't know a lot of black people and they don't go into black space. So when they do speak to black people, it does come off as condescending, like Hillary Clinton accent changing depending on what black church she was at when she was campaigning. You know, I don't feel that I don't ill will or intent. I just think it's just because, you know, they don't spend any time with black people really, or black people, the black people who matter. They spend time with the black people who they think matter. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, you've got to have contact in order to have any sort of authenticity of experience.
Exactly. So if you don't go and spend time, it's like I was listening to this guy. He's a Native American and he works in the grant and nonprofit organizations. And he was talking about how there's a lot of money in grants but it's only usually is really racist because it's like they have the money, but it's only if they have to give people for these programs and neighborhoods and stuff like that. But it's only given if you do things the way they want them done and or given to their friends who don't need money.
Well, you know, but hold on just a minute here. Here's one of the things that pisses me off whenever I catch some conservative out there pissing and moaning about anybody getting anything. One, we're Ooh. Talking about citizens of the United States who are damned well taxpayers who have busted their ass at some point in time. And two, let's talk and you know their little pink assholes always pucker way up around their tonsils whenever you bring this topic up. Let's talk about 400 fucking years of stolen labor and the check that needs writ.
Thank you. It's, you know, when I was
and
watching...
don't say you're going to get around something like well, look, we built them a community center.
Right.
See, because that's where I get to use. That's where I get.
We had a black president.
Yeah, we gave them a Negro president. Yeah, because this is where I get to use my Richard Pryor doing a white guy voice. and I love that opportunity. Well, why can't they be happy? We're letting them vote sometimes. If they'd only vote the right way. Why do they have to vote for the Democrats?
Exactly.
Well, because the Republicans hate their fucking guts.
Hate them. Hate us. With a purple passion.
There are accountants out there. I mean, you could take, because, see, this is one of, you know how the Nazis were such excellent record keepers?
Yes.
I mean, we know so much about how evil the Third Reich was because they kept such doggone good records. They could,
Damn good records.
Being German, they couldn't help themselves.
Nope.
Well, see, there are a lot of odious, I've been using that word a lot, revolting racist aspects to the Constitution of the United States. But we can be grateful in one way for the Three-Fifths Clause.
Yeah.
You know why?
Tell me why, because I'm trying to figure out why.
Because that meant that in order to have the representation that the slave states felt they deserved in the House of Representatives, because remember, Senate is not population-based, but the House is, they had to count each and every slave so that they could then multiply it by 60%, three-fifths. And so we know from census to census through the pre-Civil War years exactly how many slaves there were in the slave states. And if you know exactly how many slaves there were in the slave states, and you establish a mean minimum wage based upon the prevailing wage for various and sundry given workers who were free and got paid, then you can establish exactly how much money white America stole from black America. And then you can present the goddamn bill.
Bill. Like I said, I'm still waiting for my 40 acres of the mule, Bob.
Well, under the circumstances, I think it, in the modern era, it would probably be a rechargeable electric rototiller. But, you know, let's don't quibble.
Let's not quibble.
By the way, I had a note from Les, who's out on the road. You're going to like this. In regard to Jesse Lee, Les says, I was outside the truck, so I missed that chicken gristle eating one big eye having buck dancing Sambo coonin' ass sucker. By the way, people love your laugh, Tracy.
Oh, God.
There I go, being a condescending liberal again.
Oh, my Jesus.
But Les continues and says, that makes me grateful for two things. A, reasonable diesel prices, and B, the fact I can't hear the radio over the idling motor while filling. Signing off, Les says, fuck Uncle Ruckus.
It's, you know, it's just when black people live in denial. Because I could honestly say, because I, like I said, I grew up in West LA. And, you know, we had a couple of dollars in the bank account, and, you know, we were the only black family on the block and all this. So, and the only black people that I knew really were certain members of my family that my mother, you know, associated with, and the people at my church. So I wasn't part of the black experience, per se, as, you know, growing up in South Central and all that. So I had a mindset as to how black people were supposed to act. And I, you know, not that I would have ever become a Republican. I had that other attitude, you know, that there were certain black people that, you know, were not, I wouldn't say beneath me. Yeah, I guess maybe I... Because, like I said, I had those relatives that, well, why do you talk all proper and you're trying to sound white and all that. So it wasn't until I was 13 and 14 years old before, and when we moved from West LA to South Central, that I got the full-on black experience. And it was a culture shock for me because I wasn't acclimated. I was told that these people, the way certain people act, were bad. I shouldn't speak this way. I shouldn't act this way because I was above that. And it's like, but you know, as I got older, I realized, no, I'm not above that, because no matter how much education I have, no matter how properly I speak or how I carry myself, because you know, I was going to be one of the good ones, no matter how hard I tried, to certain people, regardless, I was still going to be a nigga. It didn't matter. It didn't matter that, when I finally got to that point where I stopped straightening my hair and wearing weaves and, you know, went natural, because I realized that in order for me to be who I am and to be Tracy, you know, the Tracy Michelle Porter that you guys know now, I had to like say, oh no, this is not who I am. This is not, you know, like when I was talking about how I, you know, about that blending in comment. It's like I did so much to try to blend in, to be, you know, to assimilate, to do everything I could do to be, you know, acceptable, that I stopped. I never learned how to appreciate being black and realizing how amazing being black is, that it took me until I got into my 30s to figure this shit out. Because the brainwashing in this country is so real. I mean, the only thing that I didn't do to you know, the quote unquote fit in was to bleach my skin. That's the only thing that I didn't do. it takes my mom when she was growing up, because my mom will be 70 next year. So her grandmother made her put on bleaching cream to lighten herself up, you know, because she was too dark.
Jesus.
She was told that, you know, because you're so dark, you can't wear certain colors.
Hold on a minute. I am so white, I am so pink, I can't wear certain colors.
Well, see, that's one thing, because you're white, and because, like you said, but this was based on what the perception of if a dark-skinned girl wore certain colors.
Yeah, I know. I'm being...
I know you're being silly, but it's just, you know, so, like, if you were dark... my favorite color in the world now is red, but when I was young, when my mother was growing up, she was not allowed to wear red or yellow or any color that would bring too much attention to her. Because that's just not what good girls do.
I think I understand, because in other parts of the world, people of color wear bright, showy, awesome colors. And I've mentioned on this program before, I love color.
But see, when I was growing up, I refused, because of that mindset that I was brought up in. I very rarely wore color. I used to wear, I was look like I was an Italian widow. I was always wearing black. I was looked like I was in a perpetual state of, was constantly wearing black. Because that's just like, you know, but now, like I said, when I get red is my favorite color. And whenever I get a chance to wear bright colors, I do. Because damn, red looks good on me.
Well, see, I don't know if it looks good on me, but I can tell you that I have a sort of mustard colored pair of Levi's. I have a pink pair of Levi's.
Pink.
I have a lavender pair of Levi's.
That I would like to see.
I've got, well, and I wore them for the trip down to Atlanta, because if I had to get out of the car, I was picking up Chris at the airport. If I had to get him, so I wore my day glow green Levi's. You know, the neon high visibility green.
Yes. It's like I could spot you for 20 miles away. There's Bob.
Yeah, and
how do you know? Look at the pants.
I'll be the only person in the entire city of Atlanta wearing high visibility neon green pants. In a nod to at least moderately trying to participate in a Halloween party a couple of months back, I showed up over at the Grove at their Halloween party, because, you know, I'm no good at working up costumes or anything. But I wore those, and I just said, I'm Mr. Green Jeans.
Nice.
And, you know, now among the young hipsters, they were like, who?
Who?
Who? I'm sorry? What?
Sorry, what? Excuse me, what?
Wait a minute. Maybe it's because you live in L.A., because you do that real well.
Oh, no. Oh, God. You didn't know me in the 80s. Remember, I went to school in the Valley. So
you were like, a Valley girl. Yeah, okay.
Yes. It's like, oh, my God. It's like, totally, for sure. Like, so non-tubular. Come on. Wow. Mm-hmm.
It's like 30 years didn't even happen. Slipped so easily back into that.
It was so scary. And then, so I went to school in the Valley, and then had to, you know, ride the bus, because I was bused back to L.A. So then, you know, like I said, there's just certain ways that I speak that it took me. Let's see, we moved to South Central when I was 13. It wasn't until, it took me a long time to learn how to speak in a way my ass, because, you know, everybody said I was sadiddy and thought I was better than them. And I'm like, no, that is not the case. You know, I just, you know, I didn't fit in. You know, I was too white for the black people and too white for the black people and too black for the white people. So there was no, you know, there was no happy medium, even though I had Valley Girl speak down. But, you know, it wasn't until somebody saw me, if I was speaking over the phone, you had no idea what color I was. You know, like, I think I've told you this story, you know, a million years ago, my life pre-Alex. I was working in Westwood as a receptionist, and I got a phone call. This is back, you know, before, did we have pagers in the 80s? Yes. It was before, you know, anybody had GPS or cell phones, so you had to call, you know, from a payphone. So these clients were coming, called the office and asked me how to get from LAX. And I gave them dead on directions, even to, you know, which street to turn on to get into the parking lot of the building. And so when they came up to the office, you know, they were exuberant. They were like so happy that this girl, they're like, who is the girl that gave us the instructions on how to get here? Because they were perfect. They were spot on. And I looked at them and I'm like, you're looking at her. And at that moment, they realized that I knew that they didn't realize that I was black, that somebody that looked like me could not speak that way, that could not have an intelligent conversation, could not give, you know, directions, you know, clear and concise directions on how to get from point A to point B. And it was like, it took everything that, because their mouths fell open. And I'm like, you know, it took everything I had not to say, you know, you could just remove your foot from your mouth. You know, see, this is before I became angry black woman, Tracy, because if that happened to me now, if something like that happened to me now, it would have been a whole different situation. Because, see, that happened to me. I was only 21 years old and not fully, you know, aware of my place in society as a black woman, but not fully aware of the power that I could have as a black woman. I was still, I wouldn't say a kowtowing Negro, you know, a boot-licking Negro, but I was raised by children.
Acquiescent. You were acquiescent.
I was acquiescent. Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to put words.
Because you know, I'm always looking for those words, and that's why I love you, because you can help me insert the perfect word. I was raised to be, you know, deferential to white people, because my grandparents and my great grandparents were products of the South.
Yeah, and they came from a place where the step off rule and the eyeball rule were real, and to fail to abide by them would get you real dead real fast.
Real dead real fast. Now, with that said, I was raised to have a certain deference for white people, but not so much that they could step on my neck. It's a fine line where, you know, you have to, you know, it's a balancing act, because again, you don't want to be the angry black woman, because see, you know, I could do the neck rolling. Actually, I really can't roll my neck, because see, those, you know, during my formative years, I had a rod on my neck. I was watching the Wanda Sykes stand up the other night. Remember that one where she was talking about being waxed?
Yeah. Oh my God. I hurt myself at that bit.
Oh, my God. But there was a bit before when she was talking about Michelle Obama and how she had metal rods put in her neck, so she was not able, no matter how pissed off she got,
To do the bob?
She couldn't do the neck roll.
Yeah.
Because she purposely had.
It's, yeah, see, this is a good thing this isn't on video, because otherwise, people would see me sitting here trying to do the neck roll. I can't.
I can't. Like I said, my formative years, when I was supposed to learn how to dance and braid hair on the front porch.
You, like Phyllis Wheatley, were being taught how to do the minuet, right?
Right, right, Right. I was. I didn't have.
And the box step.
And the box step. I'm really upset that I never learned those experiences of, you know, certain experiences of being Black, because it was detrimental to me, because, you know, it kept me away. And like I said, thinking that I was above certain people, and then realizing that these people are my people. And yes, there are Black people, and like there's white people and Hispanic people that, you know, you don't, you know, each cultural or ethnic group, you don't want anything to do with, you know. And those are the people, like when I'm watching the news and they say suspect fleeing from police chase, or suspect attacked, you know, such and such or what have you. It's, you know, it's, you know, that cringing moment that you're like saying, please don't be Black. Please don't be Black. Please don't be Black. And it's like every person in L.A. watching the news is going, please don't be Black. Please don't be Black.
Oh, no, no, no. I get it, because when a white person does something stupid or racist, it's this, don't be a West Virginian. Don't be a hillbilly. Don't be a hillbilly. Right. Don't be a hillbilly. Fuck.
Oh, right. And then when they're not, it's like it's a collective sigh, like, oh.
Yeah, right. And see, you're, because he was so white and so Southern and so and so Christian and so redneck, you're probably not familiar with the late, great Jerry Clower. But
never heard of him.
Well, it's worth he's funny. But there's a Jerry Clower line, somebody else getting some relief. Yeah, and so, you know, when it turns out not a hillbilly, whew, today we're getting some relief. Yeah,
right. It's like when it's not a young Black man, or when they go to when they do something does happen in South LA or what have you, and they find the, you know, either the no tooth having Jerry Curl wearing person, or the gold tooth wearing teeth, you know, toothlesses wearing Jerry, you know, person who is the perfect stereotype, you know, because I know there are intelligent people in all these neighborhoods, because I know these people, but they always seem to find the ones that perpetuate the stereotype. So of course, you know, this is the person that is broadcast all over the, you know, the country when they're interviewed. And so, you know, so white Americans see there, right there. That's who they are. That's how all Black people act, because they make sure that whatever image they show on television is the one that perpetuates the myth of the shiftless, lazy, you know, trifling, uneducated Negro.
Wait a minute. You get a cowbell for including trifling.
Trifling. Did I ever tell you the first time I said trifling in front of Jan?
No.
And she looked at me like, wait, what's trifling? I'm like, and then I had to try to think, you know, what I said. And then I went to shiftless. I'm like, no, that's another one. So I'm just like trifling.
No, trifling's not shiftless. And shiftless, those are two entirely different slurs, honey.
Well, shiftless and trifling, They kind of.
If you're shiftless, you're too shiftless to even bother to be trifling.
Be trifling. That's true. That's true.
You can't be. That's true. You cannot be shiftless and trifling.
Trifling. But when I try to explain trifling to her, and you know, just worthless, I just
small, petty.
Petty, just ridiculous, and it's just, it's like you trifling, you know, like our president. Trifling.
Yes.
You know, just speaking of our president, or that person that's in the White House.
Yes, and I was going to go there, but can I play first?
Okay, go ahead.
Turns out, according to the New York Times, as of today, the woman who makes Julius Geezer's bed at his New Jersey golf course.
Ew.
Poor thing. It turns out she's an undocumented immigrant who's been a maid at the Bedminster Golf Course since 2013.
Mm-hmm. Is she getting deported?
Probably will now.
Why? What does she do?
Lead paragraph, Dateline, Bedminster, New Jersey. During more than 5 years as a housekeeper at the Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster, New Jersey, Victorina Morales has made Donald J. Trump's bed, cleaned his toilet. Oh! And dusted his crystal golf trophies. Is that what they call it now? When he visited as president, she was directed to wear a pin in the shape of the American flag adorned with a Secret Service logo. Because of the outstanding support she has provided during Mr. Trump's visits, Ms. Morales in July was given a certificate from the White House Communications Agency inscribed with her name. Quite an achievement for an undocumented immigrant housekeeper. And she went on to say she's not the only worker at the club who's in the country illegally.
Build that wall, Donald. Build the damn wall, Donald.
The New York Times has outed several people. Sandra Diaz, 46, a Costa Rican native, now a legal resident of the United States, said she too was undocumented when she worked at Bedminster between 2010 and 2013. The two women said they worked for years as part of a group of housekeeping, maintenance, and landscaping employees at the golf club that included a number of undocumented workers, though they could not say precisely how many. There's no evidence that Mr. Trump or Trump Organization executives knew of their immigration status. Well, doesn't he own it?
Thank you. If you're you're such a great businessman and you're supposed to know everything that's going on within your businesses, of course, then why have to...
Right, and look, for all these Republicans who are also worried about the undocumented immigrants, Arian Barbie...
Tommy Lauren.
Yeah. Oh, she was out there the other day shrieking about how the immigrant caravan's bringing TB and AIDS and the syphilis and the infotago and some more TB and maybe Ebola. And I watched that video and I thought, you know what? There was another time in the world when people were accused of being disease-carrying vermin. They actually used the word vermin. And in some classrooms, little children would say, I smell Jew.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it begins. That's that's the first step on the road to the damned ovens.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just... we have a serious...
But what I was going to say for all these good God fearing upstanding Bible believing Christ centered evangelical fundamentalist homosexual Christian Republicans so worried about illegal immigration, you know what? Let the Congress pass a law, and let the president sign it into law saying that anyone caught employing an undocumented immigrant will be held strictly liable, therefore. And do no less than 25 years behind bars without chance of parole.
I like that.
You won't have an undocumented immigrant problem, to the extent that it's a problem, in this country.
Nope. It will be like if men have to give birth, abortions and birth control would no longer be an issue.
Right. And see, the larger issue here, it goes back to what I was saying Monday evening about finagling the elections. If getting caught doing that means you do 25 hard time making making sand out of boulders,
mm-hmm.
then that problem might go away.
We don't have
a problem passing laws Jubal T. Thumbbutt can go back to the rubes in the district and say, well, I signed off on that bill because I'm tough on crime, and we gotta be tough on crime. Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's only affecting black people .
Right, because they're laws that primarily only affect the poor, the uneducated, and the defenseless and the hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if Jubal Cornpone goes back and instead says, well, I just passed law going,
Say that what?
Yeah, but he ain't going to do that.
No.
Because his ass will be indicted yesterday.
Exactly. It's because when I was listening to this, when you were talking about that the other night, you know, and it upsets me, because what pisses me off about this whole, the bullshit notion about voter fraud and we need all these laws and, you know, voter ID and, you know, exact match and, you know, all this shit to keep it, you know, to make sure that, you know, it's hard for people, you know, certain people to vote. Like once when they, you know, instituted the voter ID laws, remember, all of a sudden the DMVs in certain neighborhoods got closed down. You know, it's like, oh, you have to have an ID. Okay, I'll go get an ID. No big deal. Oh, but wait, there's no DMV. There used to be a DMV in my neighborhood. What happened? It's gone. Or that, you know, they have ridiculous hours or what have you. Or, you know, during on election day, when the, you know, like you said, what do you call them? The video voting machines?
Yeah, video game voting, yeah.
The video game, there's, you know, which are electric, and there's no electricity in the at the polling place, or there's no extension cords, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But this only happened in certain neighborhoods. And, you know, and there's no, like you said, there's no consequences. If there was actual consequences to people fiddling around with people's rights to vote, you know, maybe people would think long and hard about sending two little white girls to these neighborhoods to basically steal people's votes. You know, like you said, if they were going to get, like, not like a, you know, a slap on the wrist and a misdemeanor and like 60 days of community service, if that, you know,
right.
If they did some real time, and I'm not talking about the county jail, you know, run by Barney Fife and Andy Griffith. I'm talking about at in jail, in the state penitentiary or the federal penitentiary.
Yeah, orange jumpsuits, plastic shower shoes, bars that go bang,
bologna sandwiches and powdered eggs,
and prison cheese that ain't got no milk in it. Right.
Right. Right. It was oil and water and whatever the case may be. And what is it? And pray to God that somebody puts money on your books so you can go to the commissary and get your, you know, your soap and your shampoo and all those other things and your toilet paper and whatnot and so forth. You know, it's just, if people, like I said, I've been to jail, Bob. That was, you know, and thank God for overcrowding, because, and thank God when I was in jail, it was during when Twin Towers out here in LA, they were housing both men and women. There wasn't an actual women's jail at the time. So they were talking, so if you did 10% of whatever time that they were deeming necessary, you got out, because they wanted, it was such bullshit what I went through. But they wanted me to do like 90 days or something ridiculous like that. But because you only had to do 10%, which turned out to be 9 days, I did 13. So by the time I went before the judge, I was able to go home. So yeah, it was like, I got to go home. But I spent 13 days in jail away from my child, away from my family.
Right, for the heinous crime of criminal eating.
Of criminal eating. That wasn't even, they overpaid me. I, you know, this is those things when I think about what happened to my life. And it's like, so you're throwing me in jail. Are you giving me, because I had already done my 5 years of probation, but because the judge got pissed off at for whatever the reason, he added 5 more years. Because when I first got convicted, I didn't do jail time. I did, you know, I had to do my probation. I had to do my community service, which I had done, did all that. And when I went back to court, I thought they were going to take me off of probation. Then they added another 5 years onto my probation. And so and then like within a week after that happened, my grandmother died. So I kind of just snapped and I didn't go back to court. And it was a whole year later that I was driving, because, you know, you put these things out of your mind. And I was driving and I got pulled over and I had a friend of mine in my car with me. And I'm like, I'm going to jail. And she looked at me like, why are you going to jail? I said, because there's a warrant out for me because of failure to appear. And now this is what kills me about the whole situation, Bob. If they really wanted me after I didn't go back to court, I never moved. I was in the same spot that I was in when I first got my conviction. So this is just how unimportant my situation was. And had I never been pulled, I mean, it was a good thing that I did get pulled over, so I didn't have that weight hanging over my head. But it's like, had I, you know, here's another thing, and it depends on the cop, because it was two cops that pulled me over. It was a white cop and an Asian cop. And the Asian cop, had he been more senior, was like, if it was up to me, I would just tell you to go to court on Monday and take care of this. But it's not up to me. It was because the cops have the absolute power to do whatever they want to do on a traffic stop. And if the cop had just been like, you know, because like it's been a year, over a year, I hadn't done anything. There was nothing else, you know, there was no other situations. It was just this failure to appear. My felony was a nonviolent felony and all that. But he decided that I have to go to jail. And the worst part about that situation that night is when, because I got arrested in Hollywood and they didn't have facilities for women at the Hollywood division. So they had to take me to the Van Nuys division. The worst thing about that is when they got off the freeway and I'm in the back of the police car, they actually drove by, I don't know if they did that on purpose, but they actually drove by my apartment on my way to jail. It's just these things that you kind of forget and then it comes back to you. But it was just like, you know, because I got arrested on a Friday, so that meant I had to spend a whole weekend in jail right down the street from my house. And the worst part about it was because it was a failure to appear warrant, no bail. So I had to do, you know, I had to do the whole time in jail regardless because it was a failure. So there was no bail. And, you know, thank God I had money at the time. And, you know, so, and my rent was paid and all that, you know, it worked out. I didn't lose my apartment or my son didn't go into foster care or anything like that because my family swooped in and took care of the situation. But, it, you know, like I said, it was just a horrifying, dehumanizing experience. And just, you know, like I said, you know, back to this whole Sandra Bland thing, the first couple of nights, I was terrified because I had, you know, I didn't know what it's like to be in jail or anything like that. But I got through it, but it was the most terrifying thing because I didn't know what to expect. And I, you know, unfortunately nothing happened to me when I was there. There was a couple of close calls and, you know, a couple of chicks were trying to get in my face and I was terrified, but I squashed the shit, but it was, you know, somewhere I found the courage to stand up to them. But, you know, I don't know what would have happened had I had to stay in there longer. Or had the district attorney got his way and sent me to state prison, because that's what they were talking about doing at one point. And thank God, you know, that didn't happen. But still, it was just like, ugh. And when I go through this and what I went through and all that stuff, like you said, for the crime of having to eat. And then I look at these people, like, you know, who have done heinous things. Horrible things that will have changed the course of history, things that put this country in, you know, the bankers and all that, who has stole billions of dollars from Americans, and people lost their jobs and their homes and their pensions and all this stuff, and nothing happens to them. Not a goddamn thing happens to them. But I go to jail because the county overpaid me. And I cashed a check because how am I supposed to know that I'm being overpaid? If you know, pay me?
As a practical matter, Tracy,
Mm-hmm.
And this just occurred to me as I was listening to you speak. I wouldn't. Not that I. You know, stop telling people. Yeah, right. but I would do a little research if I were you.
Uh huh.
And I would pursue. Because I imagine it was very much a different California when this happened to you.
Oh, yeah.
I would pursue a damn pardon. A gubernatorial pardon.
You know, that's true. Not exactly.
You had no criminal intent.
No criminal intent.
You had no knowledge. And it is a comedy of errors without a laugh track.
Exactly.
I mean, I really would. You know, maybe when you get together to, pick up your Kaneka.
Yeah, Rick and I still trying to work that out.
Well, I hope he's got it in the fridge.
He does.
It can freeze too. It freezes well. It's vacuum sealed.
He left it at his girlfriend's house in Orange County, and I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, Rick. So we're trying. I'm like, I'm not driving to Orange County, but he works on the west side, so we're trying to figure out that maybe he can drop it off on his way home from, you know, get it from his girlfriend's, and then bring it.
Yeah, he'll be over at her place, and
right, you know.
So anyway, maybe if y'all get together or whatever. Just ask him real quick, what's involved in pursuing a gubernatorial pardon in this state? Because if there's anybody on God's sweet green earth that doesn't need to be walking around beating herself up, it's you.
I told you about my trip to Canada because I didn't realize that if you have a felony.
Right.
That I was like, it's fucking Canada. What? I've been to France. I've been to London. You know, to England, and I'm just trying to go across the border into Canada, and I almost got forcibly deported from Canada. Well, at first they were talking about me going to jail in Canada because, you know, I was trying to enter the country illegally. I'm like, wait, no, I had no idea, dude, that if you have a felony.
Time out, A.
If I had known, I would never have even have attempted to come into Canada had I had a clue. I mean, why would I think that you can't come into Canada, you know, with a felony? I went overseas. I crossed the damn pond with no issue, you know? I can't go to Canada? For real? Oh, my God. And poor Jan, she didn't know what to, and she was trying to get, you know, she was trying to get white woman mad. I'm like, Jan, honey, stay in your lane.
Getting all white woman mad. Wait a minute. Time out. Well, I never.
Yeah, I'm like, shh, baby, shh, okay, we're in a foreign. I mean, most people, you know, you don't really think is Canada as a foreign country. You just don't really. But I'm in a foreign country, and I could be, you know, jailed.
And it's Canada, and they're nice people, and they're nice. They're the nicest people on planet Earth.
Except for that border agent. That border agent was just...
He's a hard really ass.
Was really ready to... I mean, you know, because I was thinking, I'm like, it's been almost 20 years. As a matter of fact, 2019. April of 2019 will be 20 years to the date of when I got my conviction. 20 years. And I haven't done anything. Never did anything before. Have never done anything since. And it's just like, for real? This has just, it had totally changed the trajectory of my life. And I am still 20 years now, late, you know, 20 years later, still suffering from PTSD, along with all the other PTSD bullshit that I had dealt with before this happened. And then to add this to the goddamn mix, again, like I said, I can understand if Sandra Bland committed suicide because of everything that has happened in somebody's life. And you get to that point where you're just like, I cannot, like, you know, I go to therapy. Well, my therapist quit. I quit. I just go see the shrink, and that's just for my medication. But, you know, the question, every time I go see either one of them, it's like, are you thinking about hurting yourself? And I'm like, it's not that I'm thinking. I think about it, but there's this small voice in me that says you can't do it. Do I think about it constantly? Depending on my mood, depending on how I'm feeling, and depending if I've taken enough of my medication, if everything is working, and if the stars and the moon are aligned, then I'm okay. But you know, there's these moments where it hurts to breathe. It hurts to even think about why is my life the way it is? Why can't I seem to move forward? And then I think, you know, then I remember, oh, this is happening to you. And I wish I was some of those, I was, you know, I am pretty strong to a certain extent, but I'm not that kind of strong that I have persevered, that I have, you know, I walked through the fire and became a different person, that I finished school and I'm a great activist, or, you know, whatever the case may be, a teacher, professor, whatever the case may be, there's always, I'm always on the precipice of extreme greatness, or just back down to, you know, that comfortable, that part of my life that's comfortable, and I wallow. So it's like, you know, when you think about it and you're going, Jesus Christ, you know, I started having, like you said, I have a tendency. I do it all the time. I beat myself up for the situation that I got myself into. And the decisions that I've made and the things that I've done. And it's
see,
just
you're probably in the long run more moral than the prosecutor who prosecuted you, more moral than the cop who busted you, more moral than the judge who judged you, more moral than the probation officer who monitored you. Mm-hmm. And that's why you continue to beat yourself up about this stuff. Because as F. Scott Fitzgerald said to Hemingway in Paris, the rich are very different from you and me. They don't let themselves be bothered by little things like this. I've been looking at this article about the woman who cleans for Trump at Bedminster, and it's horrifying because, people like him are just so nasty in their privilege. Get this, she said she washed and ironed Mr. Trump's white boxers. Golf shirts and khaki trousers, as well as his sheets and towels. Everything belonging to Mr. Trump, his wife Melania, and their son Barron was washed with special detergent in a smaller, separate washing machine, she said. He is extremely meticulous about everything. If he arrives suddenly, everyone runs around like crazy because Mr. Trump inspects everything closely. She recalled a nervous moment in 2012 when Mr. Trump approached her and asked her to follow him to the clubhouse, a renovated 1930s Georgian manor, where he proceeded to run his fingers around the edges of frames on the wall and over table surfaces to check for dust. You did a really great job, she said, he told her, and handed her a $100 bill. That same year, she said, Mr. Trump had an outburst over some orange stains on the collar of his white golf shirt, which Ms. Diaz described as stubborn remnants of his makeup, which she had difficulty removing. That guy's probably whiter than me.
Yeah. And it's just,
but
you know,
that whole scenario is just disgusting.
It's disgusting. It's just, it's like, you know, back, because I didn't listen to the show yesterday. I meant to, because I wanted to hear your commentary on the first Bush funeral. And what an odious piece of shit Trump is. Now it's my turn. Watching him, you know, because there was just, when before him and Melanoma walked in, I'm watching, you know.
Yeah, everybody's having a good time.
Everybody, you know, Jimmy and Rosalynn and Bill and Hillary and Barack and Michelle, and everybody, is there's a camaraderie there, there's hugs, there's kisses, there's, you know, kisses being blown and all this sort of stuff. And then here comes the Grinch. the Grinch that stole the funeral. And
you know, we got a saying here in Appalachia. That man could fuck up a one car funeral.
Yes, yes, and the whole—I mean, it became when he walked in, Bob. It became a funeral. Because before he walked in, you know, it was a funeral, and you know there was, you know, but people were like, you know, like I said, there was an air of familiarity. There were people,
they were telling their happy stories about HW, you know,
and all that other trite bullshit. And you know, watching Michelle, see, this is like I said, the rods that are in her neck, because the rods have been removed.
Mm-hmm.
And she just like, don't even, you know, just the fact that he even reached out and shook, you know, Barack and Michelle's hand. And I'm pretty sure we didn't see it, but I'm pretty sure the antibacterial hand sanitizer came out afterwards, because I'm pretty sure as soon as they got out of there, you know.
Oh, no, they had to go do that blue light thing.
Right, exactly, to make sure there was no microbes and stuff. And the fact that he didn't even acknowledge.
Well, but remember, Trump then had to go and wash all the Negro off his hands.
Oh, yeah, right. I know he was dying that, you know, well, at least he didn't have to sit next. You know, he firmly made sure that Melania was sitting next to the Negroes.
So, well, did you notice they made it boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl, not girl, boy, girl, boy, girl, boy? Because if it had been girl, boy, that would have been melanoma, then Trump, then Michelle, then Barack, then mm-hmm. Hillary,
mm-hmm.
then Bill, then
sure.
Rosalind, and then Jimmy.
Right. Right. I'm just, you know, and just the fact that Hillary Clinton didn't even turn her head. She sat there and looked straight ahead.
She had the rods.
Michelle gave the rods to Hillary.
Yeah.
Michelle gave the rods to Hillary because, man, she never once turned her head. It was like she is still seething that she is not the president of the United States.
She has a right to be. By the way, I gotta give a cowbell out to Will in Chicago. Trump is probably whiter than the guy in that painting, The Scream. You see why? Yeah, that was definitely earned cowbell.
That was earned cowbell, but it's just when I'm watching him, you know, because I didn't watch the whole funeral. I just watched the highlights and the lowlights. And, you know, I watched, you know, the procession when he walked in and his reaction and the fact that he didn't do sing along and all this other stuff. And then I watched the whole W doing the eulogy. And that was actually moving. You know, this, you know, from all I've heard for the last week about George H.W. Bush. He left his kids. I mean, and if this was, you know, orchestration, an act, then there's some hellfire actors. But it seemed to me that there was genuine affection, that he actually, you know, my dad is gone. This is a man that has been around my entire life, and he is now gone. You know, the enormity of that, you know, and watching that, I was actually, for a brief second, a nanosecond, I was moved. And then I realized, you know, about who the Bushes are.
Well, right. I mean, and you can save that for another day.
Right.
It's not going to change.
It's not going to change.
But there was something, I mean, I'm just talking from my own perspective, but there's... I was 44 when I became an orphan, you know, because to be an orphan is to be without parents. My mom died in 1997. My father followed in 2007.
Wow.
And that's a sobering moment, because what you find out in the days after that is that you spent, not everybody, but you know, in my case,
I realized how much time I spent asking my dad what he thought about things. And how much I valued his judgment and his input. And that was gone.
Exactly. And that was gone. And I can understand it, like, you know, watching and listening to, you know, George Bush talk about his dad and Jeb Bush's son talk about his grandfather and watching the pictures and all that of their lives, chronicling their lives and their family and all that. There was a pang for me because my father wasn't really around. I never really had a strong relationship with my dad. So it's, you know, it's those parts of me when I see father, daughter, or father, or just any interaction with fathers and their children, that is something that I never really had. So to watch this, you know, to watch people talk about their fathers in such a way, even when my dad died, I didn't really, because I couldn't really go back and talk about those memories,
right,
of the, you know, of trips and, you know, and the input, you know, those things that, you know, fathers do with their daughters. The one thing, though, the one and only time that my father, that I can actually remember, you know, my father being a father, I was dating a guy who started stalking me. And it was a white guy. And it's so funny. When we got together, I had no idea that he had a drug problem. And then top it off, it was crack. And I'm like, damn, white people don't let Negroes have nothing. I'm like, okay, white people, your drugs are supposed to be heroin and meth. Leave the crack to the black people. That's our shit, you know? So I was not, you know, so when he started, I broke up with him because he hit me. And then I broke his nose, you know, whatever. So he wouldn't leave me alone. And so one day, he called me and I hung up on him. And right after he called, I hung up on him. My dad called and he can hear it in my voice that I was upset. I was, you know, I was scared and all this. And he's like, what's his number? I gave my dad his number. And to this, I don't know what he said to my, but my dad said to him, let's just say that he never called me again. So, you know, he did that for me.
Right.
But, you know, I don't have those fond father-daughter memories. And like I said, so when I see stuff like that, there's a hole that, you know, there's just certain things that people, you know, there's that longing and, you know, that yearning that people who didn't have strong relationships with their parents, especially their dads. And so to watch, you know, for the first time in my life, well, not in my life, but the first time in my lifetime of that held George Bush within it, I actually saw George W. as a human being. I didn't see him as, you know, as
yeah,
you know, what do you call it, the reign of error?
Yeah, the dim leader. Yeah, when he was up there breaking up because his daddy was gone, I almost forgot for about a millisecond that he was personally responsible for the slaughter of 1 million Iraqi civilians,
right,
who were mothers and fathers and sons and daughters and aunts and uncles and cousins and yeah,
because,
right.
You know, is it true that we got into that war because Saddam, you know, dissed his daddy? Is that really true?
He tried to kill my daddy. Fuck Saddam.
Okay. So, you know, like you said, and, you know, when I was feeling sorry
And the funny thing is, HW, when he couldn't say anything publicly because his son was the president, and that's just not done, you understand.
It wouldn't be prison.
But privately, he told his confidants that it was a terrible idea, and he really wished W hadn't done it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was that weird family dynamic where they have to one up each other.
Right.
Their croquet matches up in Kennebunkport were said to be legendary and cutthroat. I mean, imagine cutthroat croquet, but...
Well, I heard the stories of them playing golf. It's the same thing. It's just like, you know, everything was a competition. But it's, you know, but back to, you know, Dope 45, and you said this the other day, and I was going to, you know, I was cooking, so I couldn't chime in on it. And by the time I, you know, thought about it, I was, you know, you had gone off the air. But one of the things that chaps Dope 45's high is, like you said, is the fact that he will never be in that old money Bush, you know, New England kind of money.
No.
It'll never.
No, everybody knows his money. Everybody knows the source of the of Trump money is pimping.
Exactly.
I mean, his granddaddy ran a bordello, and his daddy took the money he got from his daddy and parlayed it into more money by being a racist, redlining landlord.
Mm-hmm. He will never have, what is it, did you say that about, he will, there will never be a Trump dynasty. Was that you?
Well, I mean, he yearns for one.
But it's not to that level, not to that extent.
I think that's why it's so important that Robert Mueller get to the bottom of everything. And frankly, more than going after Trump, just because of how I feel about impeachment, it's far more important that Ivanka, Jared, and Junior go down. And if Eric could go down too, that would be cool.
Exactly. All of them. Like you said, fuck Trump. Because see, like you said, if they start the impeachment, it'll ensure a 2020 victory. Let him, you know, just start, you know, cutting the people out from
now. There's one angle here that I think is deserving of our attention, and I'm glad you sort of opened the door on this. Secondarily, I'm going to have to consult with Agnes because, you know, we go into the cosmetic section at Wally World from time to time. You know, because somebody needs an eyebrow pencil or something, a new mascara, whatever, you know.
So, Bob, what shade do you wear?
you know, they don't. I just use cornstarch. we got a big powder puff, and I just, right in the face.
Makeup!
With it.
Yeah. Like, remember those?
Right.
Makeup!
Whack! But I've never seen that color that Trump is on anything other than a fucking Oompa Loompa. So we'll go into that some other time. I mean, I don't know if he buys his makeup from Oompa Loompas R Us or what. But no, the one that deserves our attention is, you know that this emoluments lawsuit continues to just sort of percolate through the federal court system.
Right.
And you know, we got the brand new story out that says that the Saudis dummied up a bunch of veterans advocacy meetings and used American veterans and bought up a bunch of hotel rooms across the river in Virginia. And then after Trump was inaugurated or after he won, they canceled all those rooms and spent something like nearly a third of $1 million
for what?
On rooms at the Trump International Hotel in D.C.
Shit! How do you spend that much money on hotel rooms?
Well, but because they, you know, it was favor currying. Okay, it was literally, it was textbook emoluments, and that's what I'm getting at, and that is proof. In many ways, that's proof of the argument that Maryland and D.C. are making, that he is damaging business by unconstitutionally leveraging his office for his own personal private gain.
Right.
Okay, so here's something to think about.
I'm thinking.
If that lawsuit succeeds, there will be a judicial finding. And assuming that it survives all the way up to and including Kavanaugh and Gorsuch,
oh God,
there will be, if Maryland and D.C. win this suit, there will be a judicial finding that Trump impermissibly and arguably unconstitutionally benefited from forbidden emoluments.
Nice.
Now, what's interesting about that is then that would become a final court order, which other courts could then take what is called judicial notice of, meaning it requires no further proof. It speaks for itself.
So in other words, other courts can do the same thing.
Well, other courts can say, well, yeah, we'll just take that as read, because the legal term for that in Latin is res judicata, a thing already judged.
Oh.
And so then if the House wanted to impeach on the issue of emoluments, it would be res judicata that he had violated that provision.
But would the Senate still have to go
to the Senate, but it becomes very difficult to evade the fact that it has already been adjudged.
Ah.
And here's one more thing. The Emoluments Clause of the Constitution is interesting because it says that the Congress can act and say, it's okay, he can get some emoluments here and there.
Right.
The Congress is afforded that power. But the Congress is not afforded that power retroactively.
Oh.
The language in the Constitution does not contemplate making past acts tolerable. Let me see here.
He doesn't get a mulligan.
Well, it's not just that he doesn't get a mulligan, Tracy. He doesn't get to have Sherman fire up the Wayback Machine.
I miss Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8, for those who want to look it up. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Well, Saudi Arabia has a king.
Last time I checked.
Okay. And he holds office of profit and trust under the Constitution of the United States. And Congress, this Republican Congress, has never bothered to pass a bill saying, it's okay if he wants to take some emoluments.
Nope. They have not.
Well, as of January the 3rd, 2019, guess what the Congress ain't gonna fucking do?
Yeah, they're not going to go. They're not going to say.
This is a moment where the Republicans in the House and Senate have dropped the damn ball,
which is shocking.
They could have said, "We're not going to let Donald Trump be bothered with all of this emolument stuff."
I am actually surprised that they didn't do that. How did they let that get by?
Well, they thought the fix was in, and he wasn't going to be touched. I don't know.
Maybe they really didn't think that November of 2018 they were going to get their hats handed to them. That the Democrats would take a majority.
But the larger point is, if this succeeds and he is found to have violated the Emoluments Clause, that's a high crime or deliberate violation of the Constitution is arguably a high crime or misdemeanor.
Crimes and misdemeanor. Yes.
And so at that point in time, the only way Mitch McConnell can avoid it is to simply refuse to try the bill of impeachment. In other words, to do a Merrick Garland on it.
Right. And therein lies the problem. He can do that, right?
Well, no, there's nothing that says he can, but there was nothing that said he could ignore the Merrick Garland nomination either.
He can do that.
Chinless Mitch can do anything he wants to do because no one will stop him.
No one.
No one stopped him when he was minority leader, and no one stops him when he's majority leader.
He just does what the fuck he wants to do. Oh, I know we got to go, but I have a question.
Yes.
Are Darlene and Charlene, are they white? Just, you know,
I'm making an assumption here, but I'm assuming yes.
Okay. So I know I can't be in the sisterhood of Darlene, Charlene, and Kathleen because, you know, my name is Tracy. But I'm going to propose a reverse Oreo cookie sisterhood.
Oh, white on the outside, black on the inside?
Yes. And how much are you short now?
Oh, we met the challenge, by the way.
And that's why you met the challenge. You met the challenge because of the $50.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna to start fundraising for tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm gonna do a reverse, you know, with the sisterhood, but a reverse Oreo cookie challenge of $20.
Okay, so all reverse Oreo sisters are challenged to jump in behind Tracy's $20. Is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
a reverse Oreo cookie challenge because
now wait, does that have to wait? Does that have to be a sisterhood?
No, you're right. No, a reverse. So we got.
So it's a society. It's the reverse Oreo society.
It's the reverse Oreo cookie society.
Rocks.
Rocks.
Tracy Rocks. Tracy Rocks. This is beautiful. It's like Charlene said a minute ago. She said, what a productive evening. I've been accepted into the sorority of Leans, and the fundraising hasn't been this much fun since the night former Mayor Buddy Chianchi of crime and marinara sauce fame worked the crowd for a nonprofit I worked for. The only difference, he told the big shots what they were going to give. Signed, Sister Charlene from Rogue Island. Yes.
So well, see, that is rocks.
That's the thing. I need. Hey, you know, does barbecue sauce count? Because my marinara is found wanting, but the barbecue sauce is pretty rocking.
Yeah. See, I make a mean marinara sauce. Oh, so the tortilla soup I told you about was a hit. That went into 2 days. So this morning, because I'm working, so I'm waiting. I have a filter to pick up, but I did. A beef stew in a crock pot, but I overdid it with the smoked paprika, so there was a lot of pepper, and I'm like, and I freaked out because I'm like, oh my god! So I went online to, you know, you gotta love Google.
Help! My beef stew is too spicy.
It's too spicy, and so first they said to dilute it with more broth, and that didn't work. And then they said add a little sugar, and that really didn't work. So the next step was peanut butter.
Well, hell yeah.
So I put peanut butter in my, and I had to lie to Jan because she saw me with the peanut butter next to the stew. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, nothing. I just wanted some peanut butter. And then I threw the peanut butter.
Yeah, it starts with the little lies, Tracy. And
it
then
just starts with the little lies. But that
just made it Indonesian.
Right. My mother, well, according to my mom, it made a Thai. So Thai, Indonesian, you know, about the same spot.
I'd have had a bowl.
Oh, dude. But you, the thing is, you couldn't really taste the peanut butter. You really couldn't taste the peanut butter. And it got rid of the pepper. You know, I learned the hard way. There's, you know, I did not realize that smoked paprika had an undertone of pepper because I love paprika, but I was out of regular paprika. So I'm just, you know, dumping the paprika in the stew. And I'm like, why is there so much pepper? And I'm like, but here's the funny part. Cause there was a person on the, in the comment section saying, you know, because I put in too much smoked paprika, and I'm like, oh my God. So, you know, I'm not the only idiot. Like I said, I did not realize.
You know what? You know where I was going to go. I was going to say cube and add a bunch more potatoes, but that no.
That too. They said, you know, either add, you know, more like, you know, more potatoes, but I was out of potatoes. So
that's like, you know, going way back to when you said hotter than fish grease. Mm-hmm. The way you can make fish grease usable for other things beside fish. And maybe that's why fish and chips is a thing. After you're done frying your fish and your oil is all fishy, fry potatoes and it'll clarify the grease.
What? See, this is why I love you. This is why I love this show. I love talking to you because we go from me, you know, being a part of the prison industrial complex, talking about, you know, the orangeness of Donald Trump, to, you know, feeling sorry for George Bush, you know, George W. for about 5 seconds before we realize and remember what he's done, what him and his family have done to this country, and all this other stuff. But and it always somehow comes back to food.
Well, that when I got to meet Steve and Ms. Karen down in Georgia, they were coming to, and we had this little basement apartment. It was wonderful. It was a beautiful place. And I said, come on in. And Agnes was overworking by the sink, and I was overworking at the stove. And I said, you know, come over here because the kitchen is the social center of everything in my world. And, you know, you got it because you're working. You got it. And so I was like, hey, Steve, come here. And gave him a taste of the turkey. And, hey, Steve, come here. And gave him a taste of the pork. And, you know, okay. And then Steve helped out. Steve and Miss Karen both helped out as I was trying to get the slaw and the barbecue sauce right. And I got to tell you, I did not get my Northwest Alabama hot slaw right.
Don't you hate that? Don't you hate when you know how to do something, and then when you're doing it for other people other than family,
it wasn't right for a very, very simple reason.
What ingredient did you not have?
If you're making it from scratch, you get carrots and you get cabbage, and you mince it down real fine. I can sort of cut corners because there's a brand of slaw that I can get here up at the Wiggling Pig called Chef Bud's, and it's carrot and cabbage slaw, but it's done down in a fine chop.
Okay, not the shreds.
And they didn't have any, so I was dealing with the shreds, and I couldn't get it chopped fine enough.
Well, it's like me.
And so
my biscuits didn't come out, and I was just devastated.
Well, yeah, I was real stoked for turning people onto this, but it wasn't right because when it's those long shreds, it doesn't take up all the ingredients right.
Nope.
And so that came out wrong. The sauce was pretty decent though.
It just drives me crazy when I make stuff like I told you, my abomination of Thanksgiving dinner. It was just nothing went right that day. And like I said, thank God we didn't have company because I just would have, you know, like just went and had Chinese food. It was just that bad.
And the other thing was getting to turn. I got to turn both Steve and Billable Rick onto the. And you know, it's not just a thing here, but it's special here because of the pickle juice that goes with it. The idea of a pickleback, which is again the official.
Oh no! Wait! Will you say? Hold up! Stop! Right now! When you say pickleback, are you talking about like doing a shot of pickle juice?
Yes, ma'am.
You do
a shot of Irish whiskey and then you follow it with a shot of pickle juice.
Sour or sweet?
Well, dill pickle juice. But the thing is, it's special. It's special here because it's the magnificent pickle juice from the homemade pickles that they make at Secret Sandwich Society, which is unlike any pickle juice anywhere.
But it's pickle juice, Bob, you know.
Yeah, I know, and I got looks.
I mean, because, you
But Steve from Georgia Stan did it, and he went, brother, that was that was awesome.
But it's, I'm just, you know, I can only handle so much whiteness in a day. You know, you guys have got
well. This okay. So yeah, it's a lot of white folks around here. That's right.
You know, it got me eating mayonnaise sparingly, you know, and aioli, you know, aioli,
yeah,
whatever. You know, I do these things in, you know, baby steps. And then, you know, and I'm like, okay, I can handle some of the things that white people do, baby steps, you know. And then you come at me with that bullshit.
Just ponder it a little bit.
You know,
it works. I know it doesn't sound like it works, but it works. Because
so that means if I ever make it to West Virginia.
Yeah, oh yeah, you're drinking one. If I ever come to California, they probably won't let me through goddamn TSA with it, but
I can't. Pickle juice.
Not a big fan of kraut juice either, I reckon.
Oh, no. But see, that's, you know, that's Jan and Alex. See, you remember Alex is half white, so there's certain things that he'll do that I just look at him and like, I failed you as a mother.
That's the white folks in you coming out. Yeah.
That's that white people. That's that white side of you. But, her, you know, Jan loves sauerkraut and, her, you know, and we make, you know, bratwurst and stuff like that, and she'll lather it with sauerkraut, and I'm just sitting there like, you know, because
where do you come? Wait. Okay, so where do you come down on buttermilk?
I can't drink it, but I will fuck up. I will cook with it all day long. I can't drink it. I try.
Not even with cornbread.
Not even I try. Okay, because my family is Southern. And my grandparents had buttermilk in the refrigerator at all times. So I attempted. I tried. So there was an actual failed attempt as when I was maybe 9 or 10 years old to do the buttermilk and the cornbread. It did not end well.
Fail.
Fail. Epic. Fail. So, no, but I will use buttermilk. I love cooking with buttermilk. Buttermilk biscuits. I use buttermilk when I fry, you know, depending on if I make the conscious decision, because usually when I wind up frying chicken, it's because I have chicken and it's at the house. And but every so often I make the conscious decision, I'm going to fry chicken. So then I go to the store and buy buttermilk. But it's not.
Oh, buttermilk is the heart and soul of awesome fried chicken. By the way, I can also report that I declared Kathy Malloy an honorary hillbilly. That woman can make a pot of beans and cornbread.
See.
Oh yes.
I love.
Wait.
You know how
when you're doing your cornbread in the iron skillet and you put the you put the oil in the bottom so you get the crispy bottom. Of the, yeah.
Yes.
No. Okay.
Jesus.
No. Okay.
Yes.
So we're gonna channel some. Kathy was channeling some serious Appalachia. She brought cornbread to go with the beans, and instead of just using like canola oil or some bullshit in the bottom of the iron skillet to get it going,
what did she do? Butter?
Mm-mm. No.
Lard?
Bacon grease.
Sweet Jesus.
Yes.
Sweet baby black baby Jesus.
Ooh.
Oh my God, Lord help my soul. You know what? Because how poor were you? We were so poor that we had to use, when we didn't have milk or anything like that, we made hot water cornbread. What about you?
That's an Appalachian thing.
Did you guys cut up green onions and put it in the meal?
Oh, hell, we'll just take the whole green onion and get a bite of beans and chomp off a bite of green onion.
Mm-hmm. See, this is a thing. Now, your people are from Alabama and West Virginia, right?
Well, West Virginia.
Oh, West Virginia.
Yeah.
Now, my family, from what I know, because, you know, black people in our history, not so much. So I know that we have my mom's dad was from Pine Bluff, Arkansas. My mom's mom was from Shreveport, Louisiana, and my dad's parents were from Jefferson City, Missouri. And so I know, and I'm pretty sure there's...
Well, there's an article out there that I've seen bouncing around in social media a couple of times. Somebody did a map that shows the 11 real nations of North America. And what you just described, Shreveport, Pine Bluff, and what'd you say, Jeff City?
Jeff City.
That all falls in a region that the author terms Greater Appalachia.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, if you and anybody else Google or search.
Say that one more time. What did you just say?
If you search the 11 nations of North America.
Okay.
Let me see if this pops for me. See, it auto-populated there immediately. Yeah, which of the American 11 nations do you live in? And Greater Appalachia takes in the bottom half of Missouri, most of Arkansas, and... Shreveport is technically deep south, but I'd say there's some border stuff going on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like I said, it's just...
Because Greater Appalachia extends all the way to the eastern state line of New Mexico in Texas.
Well, when I did my DNA thingy, and it says about the migration, and apparently for my DNA, my family's migration started in Virginia. But I don't know really anybody. I don't, you know, like I said, all my family that would know that are dead and gone. So, but apparently at some point in my family's, you know, the beginning of my family's history, we started off somewhere in Virginia and over in that area of the South and wound up.
Probably came in either through Jamestown, Williamsburg, or Charleston.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or Philly, so,
you know,
Philly.
Or Philly, you know. So I don't know. It's a quandary, and we are so past your time.
We are. We got to get out of here, Tracy. But sometimes it's difficult. You know, I just had a note from Robert in Australia. We need a horn cookbook.
Yes, we do. Oh my God! But the thing is, I don't know how to do stuff by. I do stuff by taste. I don't know. I wish I could. I have always wanted to do a cook, you know, like make.
Yeah, all my recipes have a list, but then at the bottom it says, you know, adjust till it's right.
That's basically, I could tell you the ingredients. I can tell you how I mix them together, but I can't tell you the measurements.
That's granny woman cooking.
Yeah, I need this, and this. And this, and then dinner.
it's why I'll never run a restaurant, because no recipe ever comes out quite the same. By the way, we had a note from Darlene in Connecticut. She said, we definitely want Tracy in the sorority sisterhood for sure. I said more people welcome. And then meanwhile, Charlene wrote back in and answered your challenge. And in the message, it simply says ROCS, rocks.
We got a new sisterhood.
A
new society.
It's about damn time.
we got a new society. Yes.
And meanwhile, Agnes has been working on the Viking Warrior Princess Society too, because she and Chris from Germany kicked that off over the last weekend. In fact, there's even a photo of both of them standing with their index fingers pointing up above their heads like Viking helmet horns. It is a great photo, I want you to know.
That is awesome.
It's a fantastic photo. Let's get out of here, Tracy.
Well, it was wonderful talking to you.
Oh, it was a delight. It always is.
Awesome, awesome. Wait, I didn't see the text until now. Hillary looked like she wanted to kill him.
Yes.
So we know Todd was listening.
Yeah, if looks could kill... Donald Trump would have been carried out of that cathedral in tiny pieces in a basket.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, on that note, I'm out.
Well, it's just coming up on dark out there where you are. It's plum dark here. It's colder than a well digger's ass, and so enjoy what you got there.
I will.
All right, we'll talk soon, Tracy. You take care, dear.
You too. Good night.
Bye. The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver. And with that, we'll close out the program with a profound expression of thanks. What a wonderful evening. Thanks to the brand new sorority of Leans. Thank you to Charlene for getting us started. Thank you to Darlene for getting us started. Thank you for Charlene, to Charlene for building on the momentum. That's awesome because, well, that means tomorrow going in, as far as finishing the week, all we've got to deal with is $340, and that ain't terrible. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to our subscribers. Thanks to the folks, all of you who kick in of an evening. Thank you so very much. It's why this program is able to continue to exist. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, however you so do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks very kindly this evening to both Sparky and Steve from Georgistan. It's not often that Sparky folds space twice in one program, but he did. He folded space back to being Sparky this evening. Thank you, Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Here's one of those interesting little moments that happens around here. I was talking about chicken stew last night for prayer meeting Wednesday down in the fellowship hall, and lo and behold, Asa goes home. He tells me, he said, I didn't say anything about it, and he goes home, and there's a big pot of chicken stew waiting for him. How about that? Wow. And no, his beloved bride was not listening to the program. So, you know. The universe. Thank you very kindly to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.